The Rick unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Rick request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Rip Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Rip all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Rip.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed. From Drew and Mike in the morning.
Howard Dean was over for me when I found out I didn't have cable. I don't know how anybody could not have not want cable if you can afford it. It just seems that we're so different. I don't see how you can be my president.
Yeah,
I mean,
now
I worry that you'll do stuff that will take away my cable or something, or you never care about it. You don't care what's on TV, and what's on TV is a big part of my life.
Yeah.
I stayed at a resort once, and they didn't have TV. They thought that, oh, people need to be outside here because we have these great grounds and stuff, so they thought they would make that decision for me.
Wow.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I spent the whole vacation in the lounge at the main part of the hotel.
But Mike said the only time I didn't have cable TV was when there was a brownout.
Does it smell good enough for you in there? How do you like the smell? Is it good?
Michigan! Ah! Stop it!
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rip.
That's good!
101-101-WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
WRIF.com.
The Rip rocks the West Side Tuesday night.
It's Party Central on the West Side this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF at Snookers Pool and Pub.
In Livonia on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster just off I-96.
Yeah! Join Meltdown, the big unit, for the biggest Tuesday night party in the Motor City.
Join in the WRIF Pool Challenge to score awesome Rip prizes.
Like $101 gift certificates to Murray's Jewelry on Plymouth Road in Redford. CDs, T-shirts, tickets, and so much more.
Come on out and see what you've been missing Tuesday nights with the Riff at Snookers.
Have you lost your f***ing mind?
Not yet.
That's this Tuesday night at the Westside Party Command Center, Snookers Tool and Pub, on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just up I-96 in Livonia,
with the Motor City's home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed. From Drew and Mike in the morning.
After grilling our guest, Kathy Lee Gifford, about the tabs, we dove into her sexuality.
Kathy. Me, stuff that I thought you might not know, but ultimately, just a couple of things. Big story, of course. I want to get to that. I'm going to be like the only person in America that's not going to be giving a tribute to Ronald Reagan. In fact, it's going to be a look at what the Reagan presidency was all about. But before we start, I just wanted to say, how many times do you ever hear me complimenting a politician? That doesn't happen too much, but I wanted to say, what's the word? Compliment, or I need a better word than that. Tip of the hat, I don't have a hat. Can I borrow your hat, Chafee?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. You got what? Where do you get those hats with the brim in the back?
Brim in the back.
All right, never mind. Anyways, Ferndale Mayor Robert Porter. My hat's off because it's always off, but my hat's off to him. He married nearly a dozen gay and lesbian couples yesterday who pledged their love and commitment under blue skies at a symbolic marriage who was officiated by Ferndale's mayor, Robert Porter. And although the ceremony apparently doesn't carry any legal weight, the 11 couples who exchanged vows and rings left feeling married. It's just like the day we met, said Leroy Berta, as he married Melvin Berta. Oh, yeah, they got the same last name. That makes sense. And a handful of protesters lined the sidewalk. I'll tell you about them in a minute. The couples and Mayor Robert Porter gathered under a blue and pink outdoor banner that proclaimed to love, honor, and be recognized. Gee, aren't they horrible people? They want to love one another, they want to honor one another, and they want to be recognized as full human beings. And then you have a couple people, like, Janet McMahon, 42 years old, of Berkeley. She grew up in Ferndale, but said she would never move back because of Mayor Porter's open support for gay marriage. She had a T-shirt on that said, "Stand strong for moral values, boycott Ferndale." Well, she says, you ready for this? You know, you've heard this. I'm not against gays. That's what Janet McMahon says, but she's telling people to boycott Ferndale. I'm against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. I just wish they'd be more discreet. Well, hey, all you gays and lesbians that are listening, please be more discreet, okay, with your lifestyle, because it offends Janet McMahon. And we want to orient all of our social interactions, all of our styles, all of the way we go through life, so Janet McMahon doesn't get pissed off, all right, and boycott Ferndale. What if she's listening? Call us up if you are, Janet. 313-298-WRIF. What a lunkhead, huh? I'm not against gays. I'm just against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. Well, my wife and I, I have to say it, is a woman. Well, you know, the times they are changing, Chafee. We went down to the Pride Festival, the Gay Pride Festival in Ferndale. And, I would say that probably a good 85% of the men and women there were not overtly distinguishable as to their sexuality. I mean, since there were times that I was walking by myself, people probably assumed I was gay, right? Because I'm a man there, I'm at a gay festival, I've got a cute dog, yeah? And I don't know what they thought when I was walking with my wife. Ultimately, it really doesn't matter. It just matters to idiots like this woman from Berkeley, who says, I'm against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. Well, there are some overt manifestations of what we consider the gay life or gay stereotype, whatever you'd like to call it. And don't people have the right to dress and act the way they choose? And if Janet McMahon can't get ready for it, well, that's just too damn bad, isn't it? Get a life, Janet. All right. Speaking of get a life, Ronald Reagan, ex-president of the United States, died yesterday. And the whole political establishment, every media outlet, world leaders falling all over themselves to compliment Ronald Reagan and his presidency. This is almost like a king has perished. His body is being flown back and forth around the country, the official day of mourning. I don't get this. You tell me. 313-298-WRIF. And listen to some of these headlines. This is the New York Times, the prestigious paper of record today. Ronald Reagan dies at 93, fostered Cold War might and curbs on government. I mean, I really could talk for the next hour of all the... what would you call it? Everything built into that headline that's incorrect. Now, and they got a smaller headline that says old time values. This is what it says, old time values. What does that mean? What did Ronald Reagan put forth that were old time values? I mean, for one thing, he didn't put any curbs on government. Government expanded. And as expanded under Clinton, it's expanding under Bush and under Bush's father as well. We don't want to skip him. The Detroit News says Reagan dies, brought hope back to America. Well, in 1979, 1980, was America hopeless, without hope? I mean, these are this myth building of biblical proportions. There's not a thing that's being said that has the slightest relationship to reality and what the Reagan presidency was. Perhaps the biggest one is that he ground down the Soviet Union and ended the Cold War. That's nonsense as well. We can talk about that. Newsweek calls Ronald Reagan one of the greatest presidents in American history. Up there with Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, people like that. I'm based on the accomplishments, which were what? What? What are they? They're not there. This is myth-making. This is what all political establishments that began with kings and absolute rulers and continues today in ostensibly democratic countries, where the political leaders are elevated to king and emperor-like status. I mean, if you think about it, presidents are, I don't know, kind of, we were talking about Mayor Robert Porter of Ferndale that performed the gay marriages. They're sort of like that. I mean, they're the highest elected official, but there is so much pomp that it turns into pomposity. I mean, yeah. Let me just go through. You tell me. 313-298-WRIF. I mean, I was alive during the Reagan era. Many of you listening weren't. In fact, I've been getting lots of email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And it's funny. Many people between the ages of 20 and 25 give their ages, and everyone under 20 does. And to some extent, that makes sense. I got a letter the other day, a message saying, I'm a 15-year-old female, and I've heard all this information that the draft is going to come back, and it's going to also include women, which is true, and we'll talk about that a little later as well. But she identified herself by age, or I'm a 17-year-old high school student. So, yeah. But so those people weren't even alive. And if you were, let me see, you left office in 1988, so you could be 15. I can't even do the math here. Yeah, I mean, if you're 20 years old now, you know, you're like 4 years old when he left. So, but I'm curious both to what your impression. See, that's what many, many Americans make their political decisions on, impressions. Who would you rather be at a barbecue with, George Bush or John Kerry? You see that poll going around? Who would you rather have run the family business, George Bush or John Kerry? These are real questions. I mean, this shows the level that American political life has sunk to. That these are what people confront as questions about who is going to wind up to be the head politician, the president of the United States. What was the third question? It was the barbecue, the family? Who would you rather have teach your child, Bush or Kerry? And I actually came up with Bush for one of them. Now I figure I'd rather, you know, people thought, Bush is the master of the barbecue, right? He's down there doing the Barbie. He's getting these messages in 2001. You know, Osama bin Laden going to strike in the United States. You know, let's flip some burgers on the grill. But still, I'd rather have Kerry because you get all the free ketchup, right? His wife is in the Heinz family. Now, the family business, I'd much rather have Bush because, you know, when Bush craps out in business, his daddy's going to bail him out. So if he's managing your family business, by hook or by crook, it's going to be successful. Even if it's going under, he'll get insider information or something like that. And even if he does something illegal, like he did with Harkin Energy, he's got people in high places that'll bail him out, just like happened to him back when all that was going on 15 years ago or so. Now, in terms of teaching the kids, that's an easy one. But so Bush, let's go back. Actually, many ways it started with Reagan, because you see not only many of the same personalities, some of who were convicted. This is one of the most convicted administrations in American history, more so than Grant, more so than Harding. Anyways, first off, he's a second-rate actor, right? Then he becomes the president of the Screen Actors Guild. That's one of the unions, in fact, that my union, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, almost merged with. In fact, the majority of us wanted it, and the Reagan types didn't want it. But anyway, so there's a lot of SAG as the Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, our union. Anyways, so back in the 40s and 50s, Reagan is president of the Screen Actors Guild. Most of the actors, as they are now, are liberal and leftist. And the House Un-American Activities Committee, they're searching everywhere for communists, ruining people's lives and what have you. And Reagan says he's not going to name names. Everybody thinks, well, that's a hell of a guy. Yeah, good. That's good biz for him. Except, turns out that he's a secret FBI think. He's thinking on his fellow union members to these witch hunt committees back in the 40s and the 50s. Then he becomes his corporate shill, right? He's on saying how great things are, better things through science or whatever the hell. He gets into office primarily because his buddies, particularly one William Casey, who becomes a CIA director, meets with the Iranians. Iranians are holding Americans hostage. This is the Iranian hostage crisis that began in 1979. America held hostage. That was the whole deal. Carter tries to get him out with a military strike. It doesn't work. They're negotiating. Reagan's people tells the Ayatollah that we, the United States, will, you know, someone's going to have to remind me, but I forgot what the promise was on that end. But they said, don't let them out. Don't let the hostages out, because this will assure that Carter will go down. Carter goes down January 20th. Reagan's inaugurated, and what a surprise. All the hostages are released on that same day that Reagan takes office. He then begins immediately this attack on unions, undercutting legislation and programs for the poor. Then there's a little issue that he makes a big error as commander-in-chief and sends thousands of Marines to Lebanon to intervene in what's going on there. There's a large truck bomb goes off. I think, what is it, 234 Marines dead. Largest number of American casualties since the Vietnam War. Ronald Reagan says, I take full responsibility for this. Hundreds of American Marines are dead because of his miscalculation. He says, I take responsibility for this. And what happens? What's the penalty? None. Zero. Any other country in the world, the government would have fallen. But they know that they can just get on television and look sad and things go on. So this is the legacy. Where's the good stuff in here? Maybe you know something about Ronald Reagan that I don't. 313-298-WRIF. Then maybe this is what, like the Detroit News, this rag that backed Reagan on every single misadventure and lie of his administration. He brought hope back to America. Maybe he began the process of beating up on little countries. I mean, they didn't do well with beating up on Vietnam. Of course, that turned out to be an enormous disaster for the United States. But they figured they could actually invade Grenada. I don't know if you even remember, this is a little country out in the Caribbean, and under the flimsiest of pretext, again, violating international law, and this is what the current Bush administration harkens back to. They figure, well, if the great communicator can break international law, so can we. This is the kind of precedent that is set. And this is what, for some reason or other, Newsweek says that Reagan is one of the greatest greatest presidents of all time. Then he ramps up, Reagan and his administration. You got to remember, some of the same people are in the Bush administration. Now, but he ramps up this fear of nuclear war. He makes jokes about nuclear exchanges and what have you. Million people come to New York, I think it was in 1982, to protest Reagan's policies. He starts Star Wars, this insane, unworkable missile shield that it tells the Soviet Union that we, the United States, are in a position of first strike. Because of each, you know, the whole thing with the deterrent value of each side having a same amount of nuclear weapons is, it's like each side has a sword and others, neither side wants to start because the other one can finish just as easily. But if you have a sword, if you have a shield, suddenly you have the capacity to make a first strike and then stop a retaliatory strike. So this did not, as Bush, or as I'm getting all these guys confused, it's easy. You just kind of, you know, shift the heads. The policies are the same. But rather than ending the Cold War, Reagan policies actually extended it. Because people in the Soviet Union, the leadership there, knew that the economic drain of their weapons program was beginning to destroy the economy. It almost did that to the United States as well. You got to remember, Reagan tripled the national debt. That's what these good guys are good at, building up the military and just bankrupting the country. Then, of course, there was a little matter. Now, you know, this is, again, Reagan, as it says in the Free Press, actually it's the News and the Free Press, brought hope back to America. The New York Times says he sponsored old-time values. And Newsweek says was one of the greatest presidents of all times. Now, there's a little matter of the Iran-Contra affair. And what that was is there was this deal, this backroom deal led by fascists like Ali North to sell arms to Iran as ransom. Oh, that was it, as ransom for the hostages in Lebanon, and then diverted profits from the sales to the rebels fighting the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. Also, Reagan launched this mercenary proxy war against a number of Central American countries, costing hundreds of thousands of lives. Because of Reagan and Bush in the mid-80s, hundreds of thousands of ordinary peasants not involved in any of this lost their lives because U.S. dollars, both legally and in terms of Iran-Contra, illegally were funding these right-wing death squad governments. Now, let's see, what is it? Yeah. By the end of Reagan's term in office, 138 Reagan administration officials had been convicted, indicted, or investigated for misconduct and/or criminal activities. Does this sound like the greatest, one of the greatest presidencies? Is this an administration that brought hope back? Are these old-time values? 138 Reagan people. In fact, when Bush Senior left office, he had to pardon a whole bunch of Reagan officials, Reagan and Bush officials, because there was indictments about to come down from them. Reagan and Bush, of course, actively supported some of the worst regimes on earth. Some of these might just be lost in the you know, in history to you. Marcos, Duarte, Rios Montt, Duvalier. These are people, again, that got full backing from Reagan. This guy that cared about freedom and all of that, got, you know, freedom medals. And he backed the worst fascist dictators. The worst one of all, Saddam Hussein. That's right. Saddam Hussein, virtually a creature of Reagan and Bush. I mean, there's so many things more. I'm sure you could think of things as well. Who ended the Cold War? Essentially, Mikhail Gorbachev, the Russian leader. He unilaterally led the world out of the Cold War. I mean, he became convinced that Reagan was not going to attack the United States and convince his own military-industrial complex that that this could be ended, and did. But it's there's no way that any Reagan policy, this whole thing about him bankrupting the Soviet Union, you go to the documents, there's nothing to show that the Soviet Union began spending more on armaments once Reagan, actually started by Carter. But with real velocity, carried on by Reagan, it had more of effect of harming the U.S. economy. That's Reaganomics. You know, to get rid of the programs for the poor, reward the military-industrial complex, just like is going on now. Well, I may have missed something, but I cannot think of one single good thing that Reagan did. I mean, all this hoorah about the great communicator. I just heard some speeches from him coming in. And, of course, listening to him as compared to Bush. I mean, Bush is talking about Tenet, George Tenet, finally this guy running the CIA that missed a couple things, right, like September 11th, and he said there were weapons of mass destruction. Other than that, he was doing pretty well. Bush was, I thought something was happening to him. I thought he was having like a personality meltdown, which some people think is happening. Some people think is happening. By the way, go to my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. A number of articles about the Reagan presidency, one by William Rivers Pitt and another one by Greg Palast. Or you can go right to their site, Greg Palast, PALAST.com, for a more realistic portrait of the Reagan administration. Why? Well, all right. I've had my say. I should give you as well. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe. This is the Night Call Show. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I just wanted to comment. You were talking about that Ferndale Mary who married a bunch of gay couples.
Yeah.
And what was her name? Janet.
Janet McMahon, who said that she didn't like it because they flaunted their lifestyle.
Yeah. Flaunted their lifestyle. I've heard that comment before by a lot of people, and just on a conferencing probably to a bunch of gay people, it seems like anyone else straight flaunts their lifestyle in their face.
Well, it's there, just, you go, yeah.
It's just, it should be looked at it both ways. That it's their lifestyle, their choice, you know, keep it to a minimum, like don't be having sex in public, but let them be. I have no problem with it.
I don't think most people do, and why these squeaky wheels get the attention. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about having sex in public. Now, if you came down to it, who do you think has more sex in public, heterosexuals or homosexuals?
heterosexuals, definitely. Yeah. They're very more publicly displaying affection, where gays are sometimes even afraid to.
Sure. Sure.
So,
yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%. Thank you. I'm sorry. All right. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Chris from Grosse Pointe writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Here's my tribute. Thank you, Ronald Reagan, for sending the U.S. down a path of unmanageable debt. Yeah, I mean, it took all those years into the Clinton administration to get us out of debt and make us create a country with a surplus. Now, Bushco, now we're a debtor nation once again. 313-298-WRIF. This is Night Call. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how's it going? I just had to go ahead and make a comment about that lady's brilliant comment that she made, how she doesn't mind gays. She just hates how they flaunt their lifestyle.
Right.
Now, if anybody flaunts their lifestyle, it is the moral majority and religious right. Now, they are absolutely offending me, but do we go ahead and say that they can't go ahead and do what they want? No, of course not.
Think about this. I mean, I can understand how anybody is offended by anything. Some people might be offended by young people that are tatted and pierced, right? So what do they want to do? Make a law against? I mean, that's their problem.
Right. The best thing about this country, it's not that we protect the speech that we're not bothered by. It's that we protect all the stuff that we are bothered by. You know, I mean, who wants to live in a country where all we get to hear and see is what everybody else wants? I mean, the great thing about our country is that we can do different things and it's protected. And I get fed up with these people that go ahead and try and push their values on us. I mean, like I said, out of anybody who flaunts their lifestyle, it's the majority. And
all right.
that's what our system's set up to protect us against.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot. Good show.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. What we're talking about, because I was off on this rant, how I don't understand how anyone could consider the Reagan presidency great, or that he brought hope back to America, or that he supported old-time values. What the hell does that mean in the New York Times? It doesn't even say anything. It's just a little headline. Old-time values. I don't know. Yeah, maybe going back to William McKinley. Let's go invade other countries. What our last two callers were talking about, that Robert Porter, the Ferndale mayor, he married a dozen gay and lesbian couples in essentially a symbolic ceremony on Saturday. But Janet McMahon of Berkeley, she says, boycott Ferndale. She says, I'm not against gays. I'm against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. I just wish they'd be more discreet. Yeah. All right, Janet. I know a lot of gay people, and I'm going to tell them for you, Janet, don't flaunt your lifestyle. Yeah, they'll say, okay, sure. All right, WRIF, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Welcome, Peter. Glad to hear you. Glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to talk about Reagan. I think he was pretty much a phony, and I did vote for him twice before I realized what was really going on. First, he showed his true colors with his very first move as president. He fired all the on-strike unionized air traffic controllers, which made our skies dangerous and dicey for several years while the new controllers, you know, got up to speed and got used to the job. But what I saw was a public TV show a good 10, 12 years ago, so it's not, you know, so my memory is a little sketchy, but it was with Michael Devers, who was Reagan's Karl Rove,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about at length how he used the media to manipulate public opinion, and he was very brass about it. He was smiled, was very proud of himself. Every time there was a real problem, like, for instance, the family farms were just in chaos. They were just going out of business at the rate of approximately about 1,100 a week for several years. So Reagan goes and spends a week at some family farm as if he cares about the problem, as if he's going to do something, but then concludes there's nothing he can do. It's just a problem that's just out of control.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, if you think about it, too, these air traffic controllers, being kind of an elite union, had supported Reagan's presidency, but they have this real, you know, this real ability to bite the hand that feeds them. No loyalty whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, this was part of the long-range Republican strategy to destroy unions, to destroy the middle class, or to weaken them, not to destroy them, but to severely weaken the middle class and essentially make the working class powerless through destroying their unions, our unions.
All with making Ronald Reagan look like he's clean of that. There's a couple more examples, among others. There's many more, but these are the only two I can remember. Like new housing starts to drop by a huge margin. under Reagan. So what he does is Michael Deaver puts him in front of a new house and has him gives a speech, and all the cameras are there. So it looks like he knows or he cares and he's doing something. But in reality, and Michael Deaver admits this, he says very little about the problem and does absolutely nothing. But the public is fooled into thinking he's doing something.
Well, I'm sure glad that Bush isn't doing that. And I say that extraordinarily facetiously, because does Bush ever do anything that isn't a photo op? Anything that isn't designed to create an image? Where is the legislation that comes out of the Bush administration? What has been fixed? What has been moved forward? What problems have been solved? All we see is Bush doing everything, whether he's at a factory or he's on a battleship or he's seeing the Pope or who knows what else. It is all just these images designed to manipulate people's brains.
Right. He seemed to have learned it from Reagan. And another example is Reagan went, working men and unions were losing so much ground under Reagan. So they take Reagan, put him in a bar drinking beer with, and this is what Michael, quote, working stiffs. So again, makes Reagan look like such a good guy. Looks like he cares about working people, like he might do something for them. And of course, the hard reality is he does nothing but continue to attack them.
Attack them and support the corporations. Yeah, and that's what we see today as well. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Are we missing something? I mean, here are every media outlet in the entire country is saying what a wonderful president Ronald Reagan was, and even the Democrats are saying he changed the world. How did he change the world? He didn't change the world at all. It was a thoroughly corrupt administration that acted out the same script that Bush Co. is now, that is, attack the middle class and the poor benefit the corporations, and also make the world, just like the Bush administration, make the world less safe than it is now. All right, let's take one more call before our break. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I got three things. I'd like to point out Life of Brian was released, and that movie is more subversive now than when it was released originally in 79.
Hey, can I tell you something real quickly? There was an online poll. What's the best religious film of all time? Gibson's film, The Passion of the Christ, Life of Brian, or some other religious film. And Life of Brian won, hands down.
It was a good movie, and watching, you know, our Kern and Braglio in Iraq, you know, it's like this is a 20-year prescient deconstruction of the war in Iraq.
You know,
you picture the Centurions as our soldiers, you know, the Palestinian suicide squad, you know, the crack suicide squad. Take that.
Yeah.
Anyhow. My next thing I want
to
bring up.
Let me just say that The Life of Brian is showing now at the main theater in Royal Oak.
That's where I saw it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Next thing I want to bring up is Women in Black are having a march next Saturday at Belle Isle.
Okay. That's a group that has monthly demonstrations against the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Yeah. And is an international expression of women's horror at wars that are being perpetrated.
And speaking of women, I just heard from my mother, who's married to a Air Force retiree,
mm-hmm.
that the VA informed her that her survivor's benefits that my dad paid for with 21 years of service in Korea and Vietnam and other wars are going to be cut from 55% of his pay to 35% until she's 72% and then 25% after that.
How can these vets support Bush? I mean,
how can anyone support a man who is taking bread and medicine from the mouths of soldiers' widows to finance his corporate buddies?
Now,
it's abhorrent.
As it is, you got Humvees running on bald tires, tank treads falling off their armored vehicles. The Army supply chain is stretched so thinly, so they got to get more money. So already, we got, almost 820 American deaths, 4,500 serious wounded.
They quit releasing the number of soldiers who have died. You know, they just say there was heavy fighting.
Yeah. And hey, vets, veteran programs are now under Bush's newest budget are expected to be cut spending by almost $1 billion. So all the young men and women and all you guys from other wars are now going to be looking at $1 billion less going into the system as more and more young men and women are going to be going into it. Yeah. And
steal from widows, you know, that's just, that's something so low that I, you know, it's been a week and I'm just, I'm slow burning. I wrote my first letter to the White House in a long time.
You'll get a fundraising letter back in response. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
To prove that there's absolutely no comparison between Comcast high-speed internet and DSL, we normally show you a product demo. But since this is radio, we'll have to use sound. Let's begin. This is DSL. This is Comcast high-speed internet. DSL. Comcast high-speed internet. DSL. Comcast high-speed internet. Get the picture? You see, Comcast high-speed internet is up to 3 times faster than 768K DSL, so don't be fooled. If you want to get connected to the number one high-speed internet provider in America, you want Comcast high-speed internet. Nothing else comes close. Get connected for $19.99 a month for 4 months with free installation. Call 1-888-COMCAST today.
Limited time offer. New customers only. Restrictions apply. Download speed compared to 768K DSL. Actual speeds may vary. Custom installation fees may apply. Call for pricing and service details.
Presenting the Southern Comfort Summer Showcase. Enjoy the funky good times of New Orleans' own Southern Hurricane, featuring pineapple and orange juice, SoCo and grenadine. And for those of you seeking a little Delta delight, an old favorite returns, Alabama Slammer, with the original lineup of Slow Gin, Amaretto, SoCo, orange juice, and a special appearance by Maraschino Cherry. Don't miss the breezy summer harmony of SoCo and Cola. This smooth duo defines the word chill. And finally, one of America's all-time favorites, a little shot of soul from SoCo Lime. Enjoy the Southern Comfort Summer Showcase. And remember, SoCo is best mixed with good friends, good music, and plenty of responsibility. From the Southern Comfort Company. The core 21 to 50% alcohol by volume, Louisville, Kentucky.
For some serious summer fun, go to southerncomfort.com for cool cocktail ideas, summer event info, and good stuff for your grill.
Ladies, it's bathing suit season, and if you've started shopping for the perfect suit only to realize that you're not filling it out like you wished you could, well, it's time to call Dr. Gregory Roche. Dr. Roche can help restore your youthful figure with a number of options to enhance your breasts, including breast augmentation or reduction, or a breast lift to give you a fuller look so you can start turning heads again. But most of all, you need to understand how important it is to trust the cosmetic surgeon that you choose. You're hearing more and more about discount procedures from other cosmetic surgeons, but is your appearance really something you want to fool around with? Dr. Roche is someone that can be trusted to give you the absolute best care and your most valued commodity. Visit DrRoche.com today to see the amazing before and after pictures. That's DrRoche.com. Then call 877-338-1110 to schedule a consultation. That's 877-338-1110.
Put your best face and body forward.
More Night Call with Peter Werby, next on The Rim.
Do you have problem credit? Do you worry that you seem to never get ahead? Do you ever have any extra cash in your pocket? Do you dream about having the money you need for home improvements or even a nice vacation? American Equity Mortgage has the right answers for these bothersome questions. American Equity Mortgage specializes in helping homeowners who have less than perfect credit. Hi, this is Ray Benson. Tens of thousands of homeowners with less than perfect credit have gotten the financial relief they need by calling us. American Equity Mortgage has millions of dollars in loan money ready right now for homeowners. We have the expertise to roll all your high interest debts into one new low interest loan with one low monthly payment. You'll save hundreds of dollars every month. And we move fast. Call American Equity Mortgage today.
888-229-7699.
Problem credit? No problem at American Equity Mortgage.
Call our local office toll free.
888-229-7699.
Call now for a free appraisal.
Open evenings till 8.
I got pregnant when I was 15.
I got AIDS.
I got herpes.
I lost my hopes, my dreams.
My childhood, my future, my innocence. If I could do it all over again,
I would wait.
Until I was married. Until I wanted children.
I would be proud.
I would see myself as precious. I would feel special.
I would have no regret.
I wouldn't lay in bed wishing I could live that one night over again. If I could go back, I would say no and be strong. I would stand my ground.
I would protect my future.
I would say to any guy that didn't respect me, forget you. I wish I could go back.
I wish I knew what I know now.
But it only takes one time.
That one mistake can change your life.
That I could have said no. I wish I would have waited, because the truth is, sex can wait.
A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
The last 25 years have been an incredible time to be a sports fan.
The greatest player in any sport that I can imagine is Michael Jordan. The
biggest sports dynasty is absolutely the New York Yankees.
Starting Tuesday, fans can relive it all with ESPN 25. Our look back at the last amazing quarter century in sports, the transformation.
It's all about the money now. It's no longer about the love of the game. Back in the day, these people weren't like gods. These people were sports players.
The victories.
Chicago Bulls. Talking about six NBA championships.
The upsets.
Mike Tyson losing to Buster Douglas was a big event.
The legends.
The best athlete I've ever seen was Bo Jackson.
It all kicks off with Then and Now and continues all summer long with Who's Number One and the headlines. So join the fans there with ESPN 25 Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN.
We're talking about Barry Bonds. I believe he might be the best baseball player I've ever seen.
ESPN 25, presented by Gatorade Thirst Quencher.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Welcome to the only program in America so far, the only media outlet that is saying Ronald Reagan's administration was corrupt, illegal, brought us war, nuclear fear, attacked unions, attacked the standard of living of the middle class, drove us into debt, on and on. I don't understand how he brought hope back to America, as it says in the Detroit News and Free Press. I don't understand what old-time values he brought, as the New York Times says. I don't understand what Newsweek says, that Ronald Reagan's presidency was one of the greatest. I'd say it was one of the worst. And it set the stage for the administration that is absolutely the worst right now. And Reagan, remember, his administration is who supported Saddam Hussein. That's where it all goes back to. Let me see if I can find this real quickly. Go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com, and you'll see a very interesting summation. It's called Planet Reagan by William Rivers Pitt. And one dictator in particular looms large across our landscape. Saddam Hussein was a creation of Ronald Reagan. The Reagan administration, supported by the Hussein regime, despite his incredible record of atrocity. The Reagan administration gave Hussein intelligence information which helped the Iraqi military use their chemical weapons on the battlefield against Iran to great effect. The deadly bacterial agents sent to Iraq during the Reagan administration are a laundry list of horrors. The Reagan administration sent an emissary named Donald Rumsfeld to Iraq to shake Saddam Hussein's hand and assure him that despite public American condemnation of the use of those chemical weapons, the Reagan administration still considered him a welcomed friend and ally. This happened while the Reagan administration was selling weapons to Iran, a nation notorious for its support of international terrorism, in secret and in violation of scores of U.S. law. This was the Iran-Contra scandal. The Reagan administration probably had, I would say it probably holds the record, 138 members of its administration have been convicted, indicted, or investigated for misconduct and or criminal activities. Is this a great administration? I don't think so. But we're in the land of myth-making. This is myths of biblical proportions. This is rather an administration. At this time, we ought to be comparing it in all its negative characteristics to the current regime. All right. Also, Mayor Robert Porter of Ferndale, Michigan, if you're listening on the internet, I should say, married nearly a dozen gay and lesbian couples on Saturday, even though it's symbolic. And we're talking about Janet McMahon. Someone call her. Must be somebody that knows her. She lives right here in Berkeley, Michigan. She grew up in Ferndale, and she wants to boycott Ferndale because of Robert Porter's, Mayor Porter's, courageous step. She says, I'm not against gays. I'm against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. I wish they'd be more discreet. Yeah, all right. Gays, please be more discreet for Janet McMahon of Berkeley. You're offending her. But she's not against you. She assures us of that. And the laundry list of crimes of the Reagan administration, I read them off about 40 minutes ago. Probably, in fact, I'm not going to go at it again. One final thing, and then back to your calls. Number of you, young people. I'm 15 years old and female, and I'm worried about the draft. Pending draft legislation targeted for spring 2005. This is from Congress.org. Congress.org. There is pending legislation in the House and the Senate which will time the program's initiation so the draft can begin as early as spring 2005, just after the 2004 presidential election. What a coincidence, huh? $28 million have been added to the 2004 Selective Service System budget to prepare for a military draft that could start as early as June 15, 2005. So this is not going to be just an academic question or rah, rah, rah for the troops that are there, the Volunteer Army, which, of course, about a third of it is no longer voluntary since they've extended their tour of duty. So all of you under what? Now, not under 25, also the bill would extend the draft to age 34. Also, the chief of the Selective Service System has proposed registering women for the military draft and requiring that young Americans regularly inform the government about whether they have training in niche specialties needed in the armed services. So you are going to have to report to them, I have training in Arabic language, or I have computer skills, or I have auto mechanic skills. This is the militarization of America under these whack jobs that have seized power in the United States. We have to get rid of them as early as possible. All right, let's go back, and I hope, is it going to take till November before we can rid the world of Bushco? I mean, shouldn't in impeachment proceedings begin almost immediately for all of the lies, all of the looting that's gone on? All right. Looting, that is giving money off to their corporate buddies. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
This is George from Taylor, first-time caller.
Welcome, George.
My wife and I believe that Ronald Reagan was never shot.
Really?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest first lies of the Republican Party, right next to the weapons of mass destruction. He got all his legislation passed right after he supposedly was shot, and everything sailed through the Congress really slick. He got all his tax cuts and everything else that went for him. Now, I believe this because my wife is an intensive care nurse,
mm-hmm.
and anybody that was shot, like he was shot, would have to have a chest tube in his side. And,
okay.
And a week later, he was out there demonstrating the economic charts with the same side that he was shot in. And she would say it would probably take 2 months to do that. So I believe that this was one of the first big scams that was wasted on American people.
Well,
what do you think about that?
I suspect he was probably shot. But you know what? You know what I think your opinion represents?
What?
I think it's, people have such basic distrust of the people that populate the political positions in this system that they suspect almost anything of. Think about how the Republicans think that Clinton had Vince Foster killed and a million other things. I mean, there is a fundamental malaise. And you know, given the way that presidents have functioned, I don't mean to say that it's misplaced, but we do not think that we have honest men in positions of power. That we generally think we have men who are capable of almost anything, including faking an assassination.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I don't know. I'll mull it over.
Yeah, it's a medical type of thing that, and he did get all this legislation passed.
What about Hinckley though? Just a stooge?
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, he's a guy who'd been in, you know, and.
Well, he did shoot. He did shoot the.
Oh, I see what you're saying. In other words, your theory is that
he upstaged by Bradley being shot.
Yeah.
So he had to upstage it. And it was such a dramatic thing. He walked in like John Wayne. There was no ambulance, and he went through and he walked through, and then he collapsed on the gurney.
Yeah, and he said,
"The whole thing is."
And he said, "I hope my doctor's not a Democrat." You know, and actually, he kept making jokes, and they thought that because of the trauma, that he'd gone into a permanent joke mode.
All right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Now, all the phone screeners. I should say, by the way, Jay Hudson is our producer. Dan Letarski helping him with the phones. Thank you, guys. And they're all kind of excited about this next call. Hi, it's WRF. You're on the air.
Yes, is it better to state a lie than to lie in state?
This is not.
Peter, it's a long-distance phone call, if you know what I mean. It's Ronald Wilson Reagan.
With six letters in each of your name, 666. Now, Mr. President, we've just read that you died yesterday at 93.
Well, yes, I used to be on the air. Now I'm just floating in the air. But I do have most of my memory back. And, Peter, I overheard you spreading some false rumors about me. I want to set the record straight. I never cheated on Nancy. There was no Ann Contra affair.
Well, I mean, you must be pretty pleased that everyone other than me is remembering your administration quite fondly.
Yes, but I'm a little worried in the afterlife, Pete. They still have air traffic controllers here, and they're unionized, if you know what I mean.
I do, indeed. What do you think about the fact that your mortal coil, your body, is lying in state now at the Reagan Library, and then it's going to be shipped to Washington, then it's going to be shipped back? That's probably a lot more traveling you've done in the last 10 years.
Yes, it has, Peter. But, you know, I'm supposed to meet up with various dignitaries myself, including Lenin later this week. You know, he's still lying in state.
John,
maybe they could preserve me at the library.
John Lennon?
No, that other commie. I want to tell him better dead than red.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to have called in. This is actually quite shocking. It makes me a little chagrined about having been so critical of you and your administration.
Well, that's okay, Peter. There'll be a time when perhaps you can join me up here. After all, there is no defense shield up here.
Wait a minute. Up here? Up here?
Well, actually, I'm not sure if it's up or down. I'm just feeling a little lightheaded.
Well, I want to thank you. No one likes to see anybody pass away, and so my best to you in the afterlife, wherever it may take you.
Well, thank you, and if I come back, maybe I'll come back as Bonzo Jr. Better a chimp than a chump.
Well, thank you so much for having joined us.
Well, thank you, Peter.
And say goodnight, Mr. President.
Good night, Mr. President.
Wow. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. This is Al from Flat Rock. Been listening to you for a lot of years.
Thanks, Al.
Let us not forget that it was Ronald Reagan's administration that created this 401k thing that we've got going now, and pretty much to, I think, to absolve corporations of the responsibility to pay pensions.
You know, it's funny. I bet you, and I'm surprised more people haven't done that, that we could probably just keep on the laundry list. Hey, I forgot about that. Everything buddy thinks, oh, 401ks are so cool. But just what you said, it used to be that you work for a company, and they were responsible for doing the investing. And if they, and if the stock market went down, it was their sad state of affairs, not us, not the poor employee that can't make heads and tails of the market.
Yeah, and if you notice, a lot of baby boomers, you know, right now the earlier ones are starting to retire, and they've had a lot of their eggs in the stock market basket, you know, which are and it's been in the toilet for a while.
Yeah,
it's been in the toilet before 9/11, and I don't know. To me, I think personally, I just feel that the market is manipulable. And, you know, there's maybe it's a kind of a conspiracy to suck all of our retirement away from us.
Well, it looks like it's happening to a lot of people, that the idea that we would have a, what would you call it, a safe, secure retirement seems to be more and more elusive for so many people. Actually, when they retire, we find more and more people have to go back to work at minimum wage jobs, but not those rich guys running things. They, you know, it's just getting fatter and fatter for them.
I've actually known people who retired from the auto companies, and I see them as greeters in Home Depot and such.
Great. Welcome to Walmart.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Al. Appreciate your call. I don't know. That sounds more like the sound effects from our last caller. We're going to take a break and come on back. We actually have some open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF.
This is the RIS award-winning night call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
June 2004, David Hall reporting for the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Thousands of clients have already taken advantage of Rock Financial's exclusive smart arm. And guess what? It keeps getting better. Call the mortgage experts today to find out more at 800-333-ROCK. You can fix in your interest rate for 5 years under 5%. That's right. A rate fixed in until nearly the end of the decade. 5 years under 5%, only from the mortgage experts. Call right now, 800-333-ROCK. Whether you're purchasing or refinancing your home, think about what an interest rate under 5% for 5 years could do for you. The mortgage experts are available anytime, anywhere, evenings, even weekends. Call right now, 800-333-ROCK or rockfinancial.com. 5 years under 5%. We don't know how long it'll last. Call 800-333-ROCK.
Rate subject to market conditions and variable. Points due at closing. APR 4.776. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender. Call the mortgage experts now. 800-333-ROCK.
We interrupt programming to bring you an important public announcement from Miller Beer.
Beer drinkers of America, I'd like to discuss advancements in brewing that, excuse me, I've just been handed a memo.
No! Oh, an outrage!
Apparently, our esteemed colleagues from St. Louis have proclaimed themselves the king of beers. I thought we left that monarchy business back in the old world, along with feudal lords and bloodletting and croquet. Newsflash, this is a democracy. To that end, I am hereby announcing Miller's candidacy for the president of beer. Here's our platform, Miller Lite, the great-tasting beer that's less filling. Miller Genuine Draft, a beer with genuine flavor that's cold-filtered smooth. Stand your ground, America. Vote for Miller and you're voting for democracy. For free choice and hot dogs, apple pie, outlet malls, Swedish massage, and the American way of life. Another memo? Okay, scratch Swedish massage. That turns out wasn't us.
Vote for great taste at VoteMillerBeer.com. Miller, good call. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Detroit, the most anticipated new release of 2004, is finally here. This Monday night, starting at 10 p.m., it's the Velvet Revolver CD release party at the Hard Rock Cafe in downtown Detroit. It's your first opportunity to score the long-awaited new release, Contraband. This Monday night, starting at 10 p.m. at the Hard Rock Cafe, downtown Detroit, win Velvet Revolver giveaways, including an artboard autographed by the band. Buy the CD from the Rock Box Monday night and receive a free poster that night only. The Velvet Revolver CD release party, Monday night, 10 p.m. at the Hard Rock Cafe, downtown Detroit. Velvet Revolver, Contraband. Available at all DMRC locations Tuesday, June 8th.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike, it's Mark.
Hey.
I just called to tell you that you went over your friendship minutes last month.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you guessed you'd need 1,000 friendship minutes, and you went over by 640. I mean, that trip to Tahoe, that alone was 340 minutes right there.
You charted my minutes?
Yeah. I mean, it happens, but
what?
Let's see. I'm going to need...
What does Dave have?
Dave has 1,000 minutes, too, but he didn't go on that trip, so he's okay.
But...
Let's see. You went 640 over, and I have to charge you 40 cents a minute.
What?
Oh, and we went out of our friendship area that time, too, so we're going to end that.
Where's our friendship area?
I'm going to need $294.13 from you. Thanks a lot, Mike.
How does your wireless company make you feel? Introducing an entirely new way to buy wireless. The Sprint PCS Fair and Flexible plan automatically adjusts every month so you don't waste a lot of money or minutes. Starting at $35 a month. Sprint PCS. Now that's better.
Offer ends 8/28/04 with two-year agreement and credit approval. Activation and termination fees apply. Additional terms apply. Not available everywhere. See store for details.
Wow, what a long day, huh?
Yeah, I don't ever want to move again.
No kidding. If you told me lightning was going to strike this chair, I still wouldn't move.
Oh, yeah? Well, if a spaceship came down and said, like, get up right now, we're going to abduct you and do all sorts of freaky tests and stuff, I'd be like, if you can haul my butt up there, go right ahead. I'm not moving.
Well, if my pants all of a sudden shrank to six sizes too small, I still wouldn't move.
Hey, if your pants all of a sudden disappeared, I still wouldn't move.
Yeah, I'm never moving again.
I heard that. Hey, you want to get a couple iced coffees at Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah, let's go.
Delicious, refreshing Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee. It's made from the best coffee in America, double brewed and poured over ice, so it's cold and invigorating. Pick one up today, and it'll return the favor.
Oh, man, that hit the spot. You ready to move that sofa?
Yeah, I'm pumped. I may never need to sit again.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts all day on June 8th for a free small iced coffee. Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee is double brewed and served over ice. Stop by your local shop and try one today. Participation may vary. One per customer.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome back. The mayor of Ferndale married in a symbolic act about a dozen gay and lesbians, and I seem to have lost. How could I do? Oh, here it is. Yeah, we were talking about Janet McMahon of Berkeley, 42 years old. She opposes this. She said, I'm not against gays, but I'm against the way they flaunt their lifestyle. I don't even know what that means. What does it mean, holding hands? I just wish they'd be more discreet. Now, let's see. Who is this here? I don't have the name. Mike writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He actually mostly wanted to talk about my criticism of the Reagan administration of saying I can't think of one single positive thing that Reagan or the Reagan administration did. It was corrupt. It was warlike. It extended the Cold War. It didn't end it. He takes some issue with that. Actually, I'll tell you, Mike, what you say is too long and complicated to actually read on the air and then respond to. If you go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. There's an article about that from the Atlantic Monthly, I think from about 10 years ago. And he says, I'm not with the lady from Berkeley, but she is right when she says she doesn't want to see gays doing sexual acts in public. Well, she doesn't say that. She says she doesn't want them to flaunt their lifestyle, and we don't even know what that means. Who knows what it means? I do not wish to see that either, nor do I want to see heterosexuals doing such acts either. I do not agree with being gay, but I'm not going to promote it. And no matter what they're pushing their level, I can't get this. I do not agree with being gay, but I am not going to promote it and feel that no matter what they are pushing their lifestyles against straight people. Huh? However, aren't we, and by we I mean heterosexuals, pushing our lifestyles against gays? Well, yeah. I mean, they're certainly not pushing their lifestyles on us. My friend Jeff Montgomery, that heads the Triangle Foundation, the main gay organization in Detroit, and sponsored the Pride Day in Ferndale today, he said, oh, yeah, I chose to be gay so I could be discriminated against and threatened and attacked and what have you. But certainly there has been a demand for centuries that gay people conform to straight lifestyles, if you'll want to call it that. I mean, for one thing, calling homosexuality and lesbian people lifestyles, like it's a choice. Well, you know, I think I'll adopt this as a lifestyle because it's so cool. Yeah. I mean, it's just a misuse of the term. And fortunately, I think even with all this big hullabaloo and all these uptight right-wing Christians and other homophobes making all this noise, you can see the sea change that's happening. And this demand for inclusion in the official acts of this society, and, you know, in the case we're talking about here, marriage, has opened up a whole new wave of tolerance, even for people that, like Mike says, he doesn't, how does he say it? I don't want to, he's not going to promote homosexuality. Well, I mean, well, that doesn't make any sense, promote it. Nobody's promoting it or not promoting it. When groups are discriminated against, that there's this tendency or this necessity, actually, to say what I am, who I am, the category you've put me in is good. Back in the 1960s and the 1970s, that happened with African Americans. I was trying to think of the slogan. What was... I mean, there were all these slogans that put forth this very positive spin on being of African descent. And this came out of, you know, centuries of slavery and discrimination. It was necessary to do that, because what happens is people that are excluded begin, even when they resent, rebel, or dislike the definitions that the dominant society put on them, there's a tendency for many people within that group to accept the dominant society's definitions of them. So it's necessary to have this sense of pride, and that's why these gay events are called gay pride. We're not ashamed of being gay any longer. We're not going to hide any longer. We're going to be who we are, and if we want to marry, we want to marry publicly. One of the stickers that was being passed out in Ferndale today said, I can't remember exactly how it said, but don't vote on our marriages, because some of these right-wingers are trying to get a constitutional amendment in Michigan that would forever ban gay marriages. And they're saying, essentially, we are human beings. Don't vote on our rights to publicly and officially commit ourselves to one another and have the same rights as everyone else. I mean, these anti-gay homophobes, they're the White Citizens Councils and Bull Connors and the segregationists of 40 and 50 years ago, I'd say. And just like it's taken us a long time to get over all that, it's time to start getting over all this as well. All right. I'd like to hear from you. I'm Peter Werby, 313-298-WRIF, and our next caller is right here. Hi. You're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with us?
You forgot how to take grenade to work.
What?
Oh, sorry, Peter.
Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
What I want to talk about is the 401k.
Sure.
I worked for a security company, and I paid into it, and for every dollar I would put in, they would match it.
Uh-huh.
Well, since then, I lost my job because they put my car out of commission, and I had to roll it over into an IRA.
Right.
9/11, when 9/11 hit, okay, I watched the stock market just drop. I was watching hundreds of my dollars just go right down the tubes. Now I have hardly any money left in my 401k.
And yeah, you're not alone.
Right, I know I'm not alone.
In fact, I for a while was calling them 201ks.
Okay, well, that 401k to me is nothing but a joke. Like I said, I had to roll it over. I have to agree with the first caller. They called in about the 401k.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with it. I mean, the company I work for right now has no, we have no retirement at all. None.
Yeah, and some companies, and for one thing, they don't match it dollar for dollar. They match it dollar to dollar up to a certain limit. There's a few companies, including the one I work for, that gives you both a pension and offers you a 401k with matching. But this is an extraordinarily generous company that I work for. You don't find too many like this. I mean, they're usually trying to figure out how they can do right by you rather than most companies are trying to figure out how they can screw their employees.
And not only that, but if you ever look at, now I want to talk about 9/11 for a minute. I want to talk about the money. Have you ever seen a $20 bill where you can fold it a certain way?
Yeah.
And it shows the Twin Towers?
Right. If you go on the internet, if you just put in 9/11 and $20 bill, you'll get a diagram of how to fold it.
Right. And I've done it. And it shows the Twin Towers. If you take a $10 bill and do it the same way,
yeah,
it shows the bridge in Paris.
Really?
The tower of Paris.
The Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
How about with a $5 bill?
I haven't tried anything with a five yet.
It'll look like the old Hudson's Building here in Detroit.
Right. Well, I haven't tried that one.
Well,
yet.
Give it a whirl. All right. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Here, Joe writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I want to thank you for being the first person to, as usual, to speak the truth, in this case about Ronald Reagan. What's all the deal about a former president dying that gets all the false accolades that he's getting? It's not really clear what this is all about, other than it's people in power celebrating someone else who was a powerful political leader. Because, I mean, think about this. What if rather than every newspaper, I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, he lived a long life. He lived 93 years old. And I can tell from having a parent that passed away at a fairly advanced age that it doesn't make it any easier to lose somebody. And there's some significance, historical significance, that someone who was a prominent figure in the political system has died. But all of this, I don't get it. I mean, this is like the king has died, and it probably has some of the same social significance, or why the people that are at the power centers of this society pump up someone to this degree and say nothing of the critical aspects of the Reagan administration. I mean, I was reading from these headlines earlier about Reagan dies, brought hope back to America. It just occurred to me, that's an insane headline. That's what it says. Reagan dies, brought hope back to America. They mean during his administration, but it sounds like they mean because he died. And the New York Times says old-time values, an absolutely meaningless phrase. Anybody out there can explain to me why there'd be a little headline in the New York Times that says old-time values? What old-time values did Ronald Reagan represent? Not smaller government. The government expanded. Not a balanced budget. He tripled the deficit. Not democracy. He was in bed with every vicious fascist dictator in the world. Not support of the average working man and woman because he attacked unions. So, but who'll say that? We just have, I mean, look, all the Democrats are saying I can't even remember what they were saying. Just fill in the blanks, I guess. Anyways, Joe says Reagan was awful at union busting. How dare the Detroit Rag tout him as a good president, but what do you expect from a rag scab paper? Yeah, they want to protect their own. Oh, yeah, a little note here that I'm remiss in not mentioning. The Pistons, Detroit Pistons, beat the L.A. Lakers 87-75. Detroit wins game number one. This is absolutely amazing. I mean, I was predicting it was going to be five games, right, with L.A. taking four. I mean, it didn't occur to me that Detroit, I mean, there was particularly that last game with the Indiana Pacers was pretty exciting, but it wasn't, except for the last few minutes, wasn't exactly marked by great basketball playing, and the Lakers are damn good. But who knows? Maybe Detroit can do it. All right. Continuing onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi.
I'm just calling to kind of disagree with everyone who's saying that it's that he was the worst president.
Okay.
And how he supported dictatorship and communism and fascism. Back when he was in administration, Saddam Hussein wasn't really a terrorist then. He was, they were trying to, I mean, I know that was the Cold War during that and before Desert Storm, but he helped them. You know what I'm saying? He helped.
No, I haven't a clue what you're saying. I mean, and what you're suggesting, I think, is so misses the mark historically that you ought to go back and do a bunch of reading before you say things like this publicly.
I mean, Saddam Hussein was awful. He's always been awful.
Right.
But I guess Reagan was trying to help him. I mean, I understand that. I don't know. I mean, I do know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't think so. Why would he be helping Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier in Haiti? Why did they support Pinochet in Chile? Why did they support Riomont, this butcher that killed thousands and thousands of peasants? Why did they support these mercenaries with our tax dollars that killed hundreds of thousands of peasants in Central America?
Well, I'm not totally sure. I wasn't really alive, but I mean, I know a lot. I know a lot about. I don't know a lot about Reagan, but I know enough to say that he's done a lot good more than bad for the country.
Well, name two things.
Well, I know he the deficit. He made it the highest.
Wait a minute. It's not good to have a deficit. It's like he maxed us out on the national credit card. He tripled the national debt. That's not good. Like Bush now has this huge national debt. It means that you are going to be paying for this throughout your life. That when you start working or when you're working, when you see a third of your paycheck go to taxes, part of that is going to go to foreign investors who have loaned the United States money in order to maintain our status as a debtor nation. It is not good to have debts like that. Well, you need to do some reading, I'm sorry to say. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hold on one second. Let me say this. These are important issues that we're talking about. Some of them have to do with lots of people, life and death. It has to do with economic prosperity or ruin. And just to call up and say, well, I think or I get a feeling, I mean, you got to know this stuff cold, or you ought to just opt out of the whole decision-making process. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Burby. I just wanted to respond to a comment you made a little while ago in which you said that, you know, Christians were uptight and homophobic. I'm a conservative Christian woman, but I also, my best friend happens to be gay, and we disagree on the issue of gay marriage, whether, you know, it being legal or not. You know, but we're able to be friends. You know, I have other friends who are gay and lesbian, and we're able to have, you know, disagreements and remain friends. I'm not afraid of homosexuals, and I don't think it's fair to characterize Christians as, you know, being, you know, almost akin to, you know, white supremacists in the South, you know.
Well, I'm talking about these groups that appear like at gay funerals and say God hates fags, and talking about these family values coalition that are trying to create legislation that would permanently put gay people into second-class citizenship. At the Gay Pride event today, there were any number of churches represented there, both denominations and also individual churches. So,
but it's not fair to characterize what Fred Fouts, who's a fundamentalist from Kansas, who is the one who organizes those you know, God Hates Fags rallies, because I've come across them many times, you know, with people who have, you know, with other Christians who do oppose gay marriage, because, you know, those of us who do oppose gay marriage do so for different reasons than, you know, Fred Fouts and, you know, God hates sex. I don't believe that God hates anybody. You know, God loves every person, you know, regardless of what he or she does or doesn't do in this world. You know, and we can have, you know, respect and disagree. But also, you know, the other thing I want to say is that I've heard a lot of gay people refer to straight people disdainfully as breeders. Yet, if gay people want to be married and have families, if they want to have children, they're going to have to adopt them. And therefore,
sure,
they're going to rely on heterosexual people to have children. Thus, you know, it's putting heterosexual people in the position of having to breed children so that gay people, if they marry and want to have a family, then they're going to have to adopt them. And therefore, they're going to be, you know, in a sense, using us. And I don't think, you know, that's necessarily fair.
Well, some people say the darndest things, and you can always find somebody that'll say something disagreeable. And but then, as you're saying, that should not be used to, you know, as a brush to coat everyone with. And I know people within the zero population. There's a lot of people other than gays that refer to people that have children as breeders. This is not a phrase restricted to gays, and also it's not a very common phrase. And most of the gay people I know, I know two couples of women that have children. They certainly do not speak disparagingly of straight people, and in communities like Ferndale and Royal Oak and other progressive communities like that around the country, everybody lives together quite nicely. It's only when you start having these communities without diversity that people get mean-spirited.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily mean-spirited to disagree with, you know, the issue of gay marriage. There's a myriad of reasons why Christians and other conservatives disagree with gay marriage. Some reasons I think are invalid, and some reasons I believe are valid reasons. And I think rather than say if somebody disagrees with you, they're homophobic and bigoted, you know, people should be able to discuss their differences and what their beliefs and so, you know, so I just want people to understand that, you know, it's not that Christians believe that God hates gay people.
There's churches in Ferndale, there's churches in Detroit that have gay ministry. So it's pretty clear that Christians in and of themselves and Christian churches and Christian denominations do not hate gays or do not discriminate against them. On the other hand, what the sector of organized Christianity that does is the conservative Christian right. And I'm sorry, you're not going to make me back off for one second that they are comparable to the people that opposed integration.
So you believe that gay people are just as oppressed as black people have been in this society?
Well, no. I mean, they weren't in slavery, and there was a way, of course, that you could hide your identity, which to heterosexuals is one's core identity. I mean, whereas we don't consider our core identity to be wrapped around our sexuality. We have this broad definition of ourselves, of who we are. But because that gays have been labeled as a deviant sexuality, in some cases for centuries, they had to hide it, and they were capable of doing it. They were capable of marrying. You know, think about movie stars like Rock Hudson and people like that. So no, I mean, in that sense, they weren't oppressed, but one only has to go even today to like the website of the Triangle Foundation to see incident after incident of gay bashing, gay taunting, you know, the level of teen suicide, gay teen suicide and stuff like that, because of people that won't just mind their own business and let people live their own lives.
But to characterize conservative Christians as, you know, akin to racists, you know, anti-integration racists, I don't think it's fair. Just because a conservative Christian does not agree with legalized gay marriage does not mean, you know, that they want to go out and burn a cross on somebody's lawn or, you know, something, you know.
Well, most of them don't. They just want to force them out of legitimacy within our communities. And to me, that's horrid. And I guess I was even taken more so when I saw those expressions of joy on people's faces in San Francisco and in Massachusetts. And I don't think us as probably white heterosexuals can even begin to think about what it means to have the majority society say you are not legitimate. You cannot fully partake in all the institutions of this society. What society condemns the most, you have to keep hidden. And that's why there was such this outburst of joy on the part of these people. And when I listened to the children of some of these gay parents saying that it meant so much to me that people finally said, I heard one kid said that that they're finally recognizing my parents are human beings.
Nobody is saying that gay people aren't human beings. And 50% of the population can't have children. Are men discriminated against because they can't give birth?
This is sophomoric.
No, I mean, it's a question. I'm asking you a question. Not just because some people cannot participate in an institution such as, you know, giving birth. That's
not an institution. That's a biological function. We're talking about a society that makes certain rules about who can participate. At one time, women could not vote. The only fact that when this democracy began was only white propertied males. They were the only people that got full rights and were able to make to participate fully in the decision making. The Democratic Revolution that began in 1776 has been slowly plodding along and bringing with it in its wake people that were excluded. Well, people insisted that if you allowed women to vote, all hell was going to break loose, not just in the electoral or political sphere, but in the families were going to disintegrate, that prostitution was going to rise, marriage was going to fall apart, and what have you. And same thing, of course, with African Americans. If you allowed whites and blacks to marry, that was one thing. The vote and all of this, you know, that whole story. And
right.
So you're fighting this rear guard action that is not worth the effort, ultimately, and just making people miserable.
I have a question.
Sure.
What is, in your view, the purpose and function of marriage as an institution?
Well, it's, I don't know if I can put my hand on this real quickly, essentially what the mayor of... here it is. What it said on this banner over the marriages that were taking place in Ferndale: to love, honor, and be recognized. Be recognized in the community. Because when I got married to the woman I've loved all my life, it was saying to the community, not only do I love this woman, but I'm pledging myself within the confines and definitions of this society to be committed to one another. Now, that's what's important: love, honor, and recognition.
Okay, but Joni Mitchell says, you know, we don't need a piece of paper from the city hall.
Right.
Know, like,
I, wait a minute. I respect.
You know,
I, yeah.
Live together, right?
Sure.
I mean,
let me say this. My favorite institutions are neither the political state nor organized religion. I got married because of a lot of reasons, like so many of us do. I think recognition ceremonies in a community that could create community institutions, for instance, that were recognized by everybody within it that did not involve the political state or formal religion would be wonderful, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean... So, but in either sense, I mean, there's some sort of idea of a community recognizing you, gives you legitimacy.
Right.
Right. But beyond that, why do we need that? Like, what is the purpose of that? Why do we have to, as a society, human beings, feel that need to have that legitimacy?
This is getting too involved. Give me your last summation, and I'll let you have the last word gladly.
Well, basically, I just feel that marriage, historically, has been about the establishment of families, and that unless, in order to give the children legitimacy and so that children could inherit the property, you know, you were able to pass on property, you would be able to say, this is my father, this is my son, I can give him the property, and that it protected, the wife, the husband, and the children.
And that doesn't occur with gay marriage. Your summation is going to be too long. I don't have any children, so I guess I'm in the same boat with gays. But thank you. It's been good talking with you. I appreciate you calling 313-298-WRIF. Something on my website. What was this? I was going to... Oh, She sent me thinking of something, and now it just went right out of my brain. All right, I'll get it in a minute. Coming up at 1 a.m. Eastern time, and are we streaming? How come we haven't gotten a single email from any of our listeners across the country or across the world? You can send it to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I get nervous when, of course, people would have written and said that we weren't streaming. Anyways, which should I run first? We have an interview this week with Amy Goodman, who is the host of Democracy Now!, and also Robert McChesney. It has a lot to do with both of them, with media. And if you're not familiar with either of these two people, you're in for a real treat. Both of them with great websites. DemocracyNow.org.com. You go to my website and you can link up with them. Robert McChesney is at freepress.net. All right, where are we going next, folks? Okay, thank you very much. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. It's Randy from Belleville.
Hi.
Enjoy the show a lot.
Thanks.
Got a little comment, well, actually two, if I could. I'll try to make them brief. About the air traffic controllers, I knew a guy, one of our neighbors was one of those guys, and all I remember is how stressed out he was. I mean, this has got to be one of the most stressful jobs ever. And when they were having that strike, he told me that the primary issue was the technology was so bad. The planes had moved on to higher technology, but these air traffic controller devices were run on vacuum tubes, like radios back in the 40s and 50s. And
that's great.
They couldn't keep up, and it was very, very stressful. So that one of the things was their concern with airline safety and security. But never mind that. I mean, they were...
Sure, they were.
Yeah, when he got fired, he said, you know, there wasn't too much of a hassle. I mean, there was, you know, a brief, uprising about it. But he was just relieved. I mean...
Well, sometimes those getting rid of a stressful job will do that. Well, most of them weren't, of course. And Reagan ruined a lot of careers with these people. And to the disgrace of the trade union movement, who, as you said, made kind of a little bit of noise, but should have called a general strike. Instead, they just rolled over for Reagan. And that that his administration got the bit in his mouth and realized that the American people are pretty passive. And that's what Bush now counts on as well.
Yeah. They should have read Eric Hoffer, huh?
Yeah.
True believer. Well, anyway, and then the other thing was about the draft. You know, I mentioned some things, and you keep hearing about this in the news. And I read one thing where a poll, the politicians are finding that bringing up the idea of creating another draft is hugely unpopular in election year, I guess. So what they're doing, I'm a school teacher, and in our local high school, last year they had ROTC got their foot in the door in the high school. They gave them an old closet someplace, and they, you know, they started a kind of a fledgling program. But now this year, they've taken over two classrooms, and it's growing. And I'm wondering, you know, is this the new cannon fodder? Is this, you know, there's no jobs for the kids, so...
Well, yeah. I mean, they talk about a voluntary army, which is being made less voluntary by these involuntary extensions of tours of duties. But still, it's pretty much a poverty draft or a jobs draft. Is that previously, though, people thought they could get a couple years in the service, see a few parts of the world, and then go to college. They didn't think they were going to be coming home with no arms and legs. And I would suspect that we're going to be sooner or later looking at the 1,000 mark of U.S. dead and probably 6,000-7,000 wounded before this all ends.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic. You know, yeah. I lost a couple of pretty good friends in Vietnam, and, you know, everybody's saying Iraq is no Vietnam, but the results of it are. I mean, to me, this is deja vu in so many ways.
Sure, if you've lost somebody, it probably seems just like Vietnam. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Ed from Warren wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, is there a real possibility of the return of the draft? I thought one of the main points of getting rid of the draft was to only have recruits that wanted to be in the military. Isn't the military we now have good enough? And isn't a voluntary military better than a military made up of conscripts? Well, here is the problem. This is why I was looking for my website. It says on my website, peterwerby.com, put this together. Donald Rumsfeld, who issued secret orders for setting up a worldwide torture network after being wrong on every prediction about an easy Iraq victory, says the war on terror is just beginning. There's a link to his talk where he's saying we're going to need more troops. That there's not enough troops for Bushko's insane imperial schemes, so this means the military draft is coming back, and for women as well. So, yeah, a draft is in your future if you are under 35 and if you're a woman. That's what they've got in mind for us. Somebody's got to fight these wars, and... we'll see. I wonder if it's going to be as unfair as all the rest of the drafts. Previously, in the way the Army is now, it's mostly working class and the poor who fight the wars. That always the middle class and certainly the wealthy, the Bushes and the Cheneys, they manage to scam out of the draft, even in wars they support. All right, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. Once again, thank you for the program. Last time I called was the only other time I spoke to you. Happened to be when we had a debate over Nancy Reagan using a psychic while Ronald Reagan was president, so it's been a while.
Okay.
But I would just like to say, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything you have to say, but I would like to say that it is fairly easy to look at one side of any particular subject, or in this case, administration. In terms of Ronald Reagan and his administration, I'm not apologizing for anything that happened.
Okay.
Like you said, a lot of dictatorships were boosted that possibly shouldn't have, probably shouldn't have, definitely shouldn't have, but at the same time, there's the entire intangible aspect of what we don't know. I mean, there's an entire generation of kids right now that think communism is something that was just voted into Spain versus something that is a global domination. You see what I'm saying? So all I'm trying to say is it's kind of tough to put a finger on what didn't happen because Ronald Reagan was president versus what happened because he was. And I think we owe him a modicum of respect just because he was the head of state, and he did just pass away.
Well, you can't sell it to me, I got to tell you. There's just too many bodies, too many lies, too many criminal acts involved for me to give him even a modicum of respect. Sorry to say if it offends anybody. All right, I got to do some, what do we call them, bill payers. We'll be right back after the...
You're listening to WRIF.com. Imagine not being afraid to go to the dentist. Imagine being able to accomplish all your dental care in as little as one appointment. This is what sedation dentistry at Dr. Katz in Livonia can do for you. You'll be able to smile with confidence and be proud of your appearance. If you've been putting off years of dental work, sedation dentistry will change your life. Over 35 million Americans have some level of anxiety when it comes to going to the dentist. But for many, it's more than being afraid. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they understand that your fears may have kept you from a dentist, but there's no need to feel embarrassed. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they're not here to judge you. They're here to help you and encourage you so that you can have the confidence a beautiful smile can bring. The experienced clinical team members at Dr. Katz in Livonia will make certain that you're relaxed and completely comfortable as they monitor you very closely while you're sedated. Many patients feel no discomfort whatsoever during and after treatment. It may be as simple as taking a pill. Let Dr. Katz help you to enjoy your visits to the dentist with sedation dentistry. Wake up to a beautiful smile at Dr. Katz in Livonia. Call today for your free consultation at 734-464-2000. That's 734-464-2000.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Got a program that fits you perfectly in medical weight loss, shape of things to come.
My name is Edward Benright. I've lost 114 pounds on a medical weight loss clinic program.
My name is Ramon Dawson. I went from a 44-inch waist to a 33-inch waist. Don't waste another day. The program, it does work.
Imagine having the best summer of your life. You can lose all the weight you want in time for summer for only $1 per pound. Go where Ed, Ramon, and thousands of other men and women have found a way to live a better life. The medical weight loss clinic works one-on-one with you. Team up with a medical weight staff and you can lose all the weight you want for only $1 per pound, without drugs, without frozen food. Food, just a regular grocery store menu and constant support.
Some restrictions may apply.
Call Medical Weight Loss now for your free consultation. Call 1-800-GET-SLIM. That's 1-800-GET-SLIM.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly in medical weight loss. It's a shape of things to come.
This is WRIM.com.
Why?
Is nice.
W-5. New Bird Tuesday on the Rip. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIS,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Rip all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Rip rock band.
Plus, the Rip gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Rip rock.
Double the Rip prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Rip. From 101 WRIS. If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and it was Don't Stump Mike, and unfortunately for me, the subject was Friends, and I've never even seen an episode of Friends.
What city do they live in?
Oh, jeez. Wait a minute.
You have like two notes.
Well, let me think. Yeah. I mean, actually, I just wanted to just say L.A.
Oh, you said L.A.?
Yeah, L.A.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You're killing me, Greg. He was on hold for a long time.
Oh.
Oh, Greg, aren't you bummed? Aren't you going, geez. Mike, Central Perk, come on, man.
Oh, I know. It's brutal.
Oh, jeez, man.
Why did you think he would get New York? Why did you think that was so easy?
I knew it was between New York or L.A. I just hoped he was guessed the right one.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. In the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101 WRIF. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Now it's the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
He's in big trouble.
101. W-R-I-F.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Email system here at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Bob in Chicago. Doug in Tribuca Canyon, California. David in San Antonio, Texas, among tons of others, said, yes, we are streaming. James in Kenosha, Wisconsin, also wrote in to Call Talk Yes, and he says, thank you for having the guts to present the truth regarding Reagan rather than the safe route of fawning eulogy. I told my son last night that Bush caught yet another break, as Reagan's death and the ensuing conservative chorus of praise would again deflect attention from the downward spiral of the Bush nightmare. And sure enough, we're embarking on a week's worth of national mourning. Check out the song Sweethearts by Camper Van Beethoven for a portrayal of life in the perennial twilight of Reagan's America. A great song. Camper Van Beethoven. I think they're a Detroit group. I used to have a T-shirt that said Camper Van Beethoven. Wasn't it a Detroit group? Anyway, let's go back to our... I've lost everything, guys. What line are we going to? Line 6. All right, thanks. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. Chris from Harrison Township.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing tonight?
Well.
Yeah, I wanted to join the fun about Reagan here. The worst, or I mean, there's so many nominations for worst thing about Reagan, but one of them, which might not otherwise be mentioned, was something that happened back in the 60s when he took over the governorship of California.
Mm-hmm.
That what happened was is that he came out with some major cut, like 70% of the mental health budget in California.
Yeah.
And the reason he did that was because that group of wild anti-communists that surrounded him believed that psychiatrists were part of some conspiracy to turn mentally ill people into communist subversives.
Well, and, he was not a wonderful governor. At one point, there was, in the late 60s, there was a big demonstration in Berkeley, California, around a parcel of land called People's Park, that the people in that area had said, you're not going to turn this into another huge building for the University of California. And they set up a neighborhood park there. The Oakland, what's the county there? The Alameda County Sheriffs came in. And, hey, when you got people trying to defend a park, what do? You open up on them with shotguns. They killed a young man who was actually a bystander named James Rector. And Reagan essentially said he deserved it.
Ouch. I mean, I remember somebody in those days had a sign at a demonstration which said lousy, just like his movies.
There you go.
Which is pretty much it. But another thing was Nicaragua. That if people really assess the facts about Nicaragua, it's amazing that he wasn't impeached his first year. Because we still, all those years that we were supporting those terrorist Contras, we still had diplomatic relations with Nicaragua.
Sure.
Which is absolutely unprecedented as far as I know.
Well, the Iran-Contra scandal that should really be seen as the centerpiece of a corrupt administration is almost swept under the rug. There's a little mention of it. They have this tragic interlude. But here were these operatives within the Reagan administration violating the laws of Congress, violating the Constitution, and creating this, what do they call it, a deniability? What kind of plausible deniability for Reagan, who can say, I didn't know this was going on. And so he's got Oliver North in the basement of the White House trading arms with the Iranians, who at the same time were saying are the fount of terrorism, which in some cases, in fact, they were, but who the Reagan administration had cooperated with. So Reagan and his operatives cooperate with the Ayatollah in Iran. They cooperate with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. They get both of them fighting. A million men lose their lives. And here we're told that Reagan is this great president.
Yeah, it's just terrible. One thing about Iran-Contra was the whole idea of selling arms to release hostages is the absolute stupidest thing someone can do because, as was in this case, the terrorists can just take more hostages, which they did. More hostages were taken after they had started the negotiations with Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
Or whoever it was they were negotiating with. But not only that, there was the situation you mentioned earlier about Lebanon.
Yeah.
About how I believe that was also a terrorist attack from Iranian-backed terrorists. And they were the ones responsible for blowing up our barracks. I mean, we actually traded arms to the same people who blew up our barracks in Lebanon.
And you know what, Chris? Probably, I'm willing to bet, 80% of the audience does not know what you're talking about. Here that Reagan presided over a military mistake of such proportions that I think it was 234 American Marines lost their lives because Reagan ordered these Marines into Lebanon. And after that, they were pulled out, and Reagan said, I accept full responsibility for this. Now, where is the greatness of this regime that Reagan headed? How did, as the headline in the News in the Free Press for Sunday says, how did he bring hope back to America? Did he bring hope back to America when he busted the air traffic controllers union almost in the first year? Did he bring hope back to America when he gets all these Marines killed? Does he bring hope back to America when he's caught trading arms with the Ayatollah Khomeini? I don't get this.
Tripling the national debt and making all kinds of cutbacks and very important programs for a lot of people. Like, who ever heard of homeless people before Reagan?
That's very interesting. Yeah. You are absolutely right.
Yeah, before Reagan, you just have a few people, just a few, real serious alcoholics and that who'd be homeless and that. But after, with him, there were families out on the street. But another point about Lebanon was right after that event, that was when he did the Grenada thing. That was our big heroic thing to take everybody's mind off it.
Well, what is this? I mean, I didn't even read this. This rag, Detroit News and Free Press says, popular president redefined politics.
Yeah.
I mean, so how did he do this? But here, listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
Says he cut taxes, sought to reduce the size of government, which he didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But where was it? After the pain of Vietnam, and the majority of it, of course, presided over by a Republican, Richard Nixon, the shame of Watergate, again, Nixon, and the malaise Carter brought to the country. And they have malaise in quote marks. What malaise did Carter bring to...
He didn't. Actually, that speech that was known as the malaise speech was actually a very reasonable speech. It was just it got attacked by the press. I mean, it was a speech in which he was just basically giving the basic facts that people are pessimistic about things, and here are the things that they're pessimistic about. And he did give some indication why they should be optimistic, but that wasn't what the press covered.
Yeah, well, there was the Vietnam syndrome, and which meant that for at least a few years, the United States was not off invading other countries like it had done so many times over the last 100 years.
Yeah.
And what we're heading for is an Iraq syndrome, because when we start ending up with 10,000 American casualties, I mean, including the wounded, I think that there's going to be a lot less desire to carry out the insane dictates of the Rumsfelds and the Cheneys and the Bushes of the world. Hopefully, they'll be gone.
I think so. In fact, it seems to me what's worrying me is that I think we could once again have Kerry win the popular vote and Bush somehow pull off some re-election in the electoral vote, but that should be an issue in the campaign this year.
Well, there's a online poll that said, do you think Bush will win, do you think Kerry will win, or do you think that Bush will, cancel the elections or not step down if he loses? And the last thing has gained about 35% of the vote.
Does 35% think that he might cancel the elections or not?
Well,
That's pretty cynical. That means there's a lot of angry people. I mean, it's one of those things that it's gotten to the point, the whole, like his whole with us or against us on the terrorism, it's almost that way as far as Bush, with him or against him. I mean, in the past, you and I have different words. We agree on facts, but in the past we've had differences in degrees or factions or something as far as the opposition, but Bush is so bad that we just got to forget about any differences and just everybody who dislikes him, which is, I believe, the majority.
Yeah, it was the majority last time.
Yes, it was.
It was. Thank you very much.
Sure. See you later.
Appreciate your call. Here is Mike writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, just stumbled upon your show tonight on my way home from work, and I must say it's refreshing to hear an alternative voice on commercial radio. It is unusual, isn't it? I have to agree with you about Reagan and his horrid time in office. Yes, the man died, and we ought not to ignore the fact. However, the fanfare he's been given everywhere is unwarranted. Even our supposedly liberal media outlets like the New York Times and NPR have spent a good amount of time talking about the man in a positive light, never stopping to mention his perpetuation of the Cold War, his outrageous spending on enough nukes to incinerate the globe hundreds of times over, Iran-Contra, and the countless other problems the Reagan administration was responsible for. Yeah, I mean, do you realize that in 2 hours of this conversation, not one single person has called up and said, you didn't remember that Reagan did this good thing? That just didn't show up. There'd been a little argument about whether he ended the Cold War. I say he extended the Cold War. The hero of ending that phase in history is Mikhail Gorbachev, who unilaterally began the moves against his own military-industrial complex to end the Cold War. So one thing that Reagan did that we can all agree on that was good, it ain't there. They just keep saying that he was this popular president, that he brought hope back to America, that he stood for old-time values. But where is it? All we hear about are criminal acts. All we hear about is attack on the standards of working people in this country. All right, let's take another call. Hi, it's WRIF. Peter Werby with you. You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Pete. I got your positive thing that Reagan did.
What's that?
He's eliminated your credit card interest deduction.
Is that good?
No, that's bad.
Yeah,
positively
right.
Screwed American people.
Yeah, you're right.
I just wanted to give you that one positive thing.
Okay.
He positively screwed the American people when he eliminated
I got you. He positively
did. When he eliminated the interest deduction.
Yep. But he cut taxes on the rich, just like successor, Bush, or not his direct successor, Bush has. And the same thing. He's pumped up he cuts taxes on the rich, and then he pumped Bush and Reagan in this case, and sends us down the tubes with deficit spending.
Nobody has done more harm to the middle class of America than Ronald Reagan did.
Well, Bush Jr.'s right up there with him.
Well, Reagan was the snowflake that took the snowball and handed Bush the avalanche that is burying the middle class.
Yep. Well, thank you very much.
You have a good night.
You too. Now, I thought somebody was actually going to call in and say, here's one good thing that Reagan has done. Well, the show is almost at an end. If you have one good thing, if you want to remind me about something that I haven't thought of, or all the callers that have called in over the last 2 hours, please write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Ken from Fraser.
Hi, Ken.
I can't think of anything good that he did.
Huh.
But I was wondering, did you ever read the book? It just came out, I think, last year, John Lennon and the FBI Files.
Yeah, I did. John Weiner wrote it, right?
No.
No?
This was a newer one. It's Phil Strongman and Alan Parker.
Oh, no. I interviewed, must be more stuff came out because Weiner, what would you be? Weiner, I guess. He did some of this initial work. What was that all about?
Well, it was done very well. I was very skeptical about those types of books, but there's some connections there with Reagan and Bush, there was no way they were going to let John Lennon get back into the public eye, which he was starting to do.
Okay.
And, that protest you went down to Florida in, like, February?
Oh, yeah, at the Free Trade Area of the Americas in November, last November.
Something like that in California for something to do with food union or something, that type of stuff.
Probably the grape strike, the farm workers.
That's what I think it was, farm workers.
Yeah.
And John Lennon and Yoko Ono were to be there, but he was killed right before that was to happen.
Wow.
And they said no way. If you read this book, it talks about that a little bit. There's like no way they were going to let him go down there and get those people riled up, because of all the potential that, how the Nixon administration was so afraid of them.
Well, there was always this fear of leaders of protests. I mean, think of what they did to Martin Luther King, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for having joined us. That's our last call for the night. But a couple of excellent interviews. Again, it's Amy Goodman, host of the Democracy Now! Program. You go to democracynow.org. And Robert McChesney, who's an expert on the media. His website is freepress.net. Stay tuned for that. I'll be back to introduce them right after these on WRIF.
Okay, so my friend Mary says she's taking this Writer's Edge course from Motown Harley Davidson and Taylor. And I say, I didn't know they teach classes to chicks on how to ride on the backs of motorcycles. So she gets all crouching monkey, hidden panda on me and kicks me there.
And my my head explodes.
Then after I regain consciousness, Mary explains she's taking this week in motorcycle safety course for guys and gals at Motown Harley Davidson. She says, I'm learning safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say, no way. And she says, safety today. And I say,
okay.
And now I have regained consciousness again, and Mary and all her hot friends are riding their bikes from Motown Harley Davidson, and the ice I have on my crotch is starting to melt. Just watching them. Maybe I'm in heaven.
Oh, maybe not. The end.
Fun, food, and entertainment every Sunday to summer during Motown Fun Day Sundays. Log on to MotownHarley.com for more information. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle. Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
If I had $1 million.
She's singing again. Trudy, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. I'm singing about $1 million. What if I had it? I mean, that'd be great, huh?
Yeah, but you don't have it.
But you're my mortgage expert friend. Can't you figure out how to get me?
Actually, I can figure it out because Rock Financial is Michigan's largest jumbo loan lender. Whether your loan amount's $400,000, $500,000, $700,000, even up to $2 million, the mortgage experts have the innovative programs that can help you better manage your mortgage.
And I don't have to pay a premium rate to get it?
No way. Rock Financial's mortgage experts, they are experts in getting you the best possible deal.
Are you just cutting me a deal, or is this for everybody?
Everybody, call the number, 800-333-ROCK. Call today.
Talk jumbo loans.
That's it. 800-333-ROCK or visit us online, rockfinancial.com.
Available anytime, anywhere, evenings and weekends.
That's it.
Welcome to Home Talk with Anderson Windows. We're your hosts, Steve Matthews
and Joanna Houghton. You don't want to be thought of as just a number, especially when you're building a home.
Whether you're a first-time home buyer or are moving up to a luxury home, you want the builder to be focused on you.
And Mitch Harris Building Company does just that. They give you the attention you deserve throughout the building process.
With Mitch Harris Building, quality is not just an empty promise. It's their hallmark.
Their homes include features like 2x6 construction, basements, sprinkler systems, and hydro seed for a beautiful lawn in no time.
And making changes to a Mitch Harris home is no problem. They pride themselves on being flexible.
See the Mitch Harris homes at Pine Creek and at Chadwick Farms in Brighton. You've been listening to Home Talk with Anderson Windows. Anderson, long live the home.
Learn what Mitch Harris Building Company can do for you. Call 810-229-7838 or visit MitchHarris.net today.
The party just doesn't stop at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they bring you new girls from all over the world, so it never gets boring. And these girls are hot. Plus, unlike other gentlemen's clubs, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking. It's the best value around. Coming June 22nd, it's the triumphant return of Tuesday WRIF nights. It's a party you don't want to miss, and that's just the beginning. The Riff will be at Leopard's Lounge every Tuesday night after that, with your chance to pick up awesome Riff freebies every week. So make sure you make it out and enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer and sexy, beautiful women from all around the world. Guys, there's something happening every night at Leopard's Lounge, so don't miss out on the fun. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil, where the party never stops.
And coming soon to downtown Windsor, bada bing, it's a gentleman's club you can't refuse. Details coming soon.
If you're looking for a unique gift of jewelry, one jewelry store has five times the selection of ordinary stores.
That's Jared.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, has thousands of great gift ideas. The area's best collection of independently certified diamonds, gold jewelry, exotic color gemstones, platinum, Sea Magic Culture Pearls by Mikimoto, the brilliant Leo Diamond, and the finest Swiss timepieces. Plus, Jared has everyday low prices. At Jared, with the help of our experts, you can create your own unique engagement ring. Choose from hundreds of different settings in gold or platinum. Then, our experts will guide you through our vast selection of independently certified diamonds to find the one in a size and shape to suit your personal style. Start your design today at Jared.com. Jared, on Baldwin Road in Auburn Hills, across from 12 Oaks in Novi, in Utica at M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, and our newest store in Troy across from Oakland Mall.
Detroit, the most anticipated new release of 2004, is finally here. This Monday night, starting at 10 p.m., it's the Velvet Revolver CD release party at the Hard Rock Cafe in downtown Detroit. It's your first opportunity to score the long-awaited new release, Contraband.
this Monday night, starting at 10 p.m. at the Hard Rock Cafe, downtown Detroit. Win Velvet Revolver giveaways, including an artboard autographed by the band. Buy the CD from the Rock Box Monday night and receive a free poster that night only. The Velvet Revolver CD release party, Monday night, 10 p.m. at the Hard Rock Cafe, downtown Detroit. Velvet Revolver, Contraband. Available at all DMRC locations Tuesday, June 8th.
This is WRIF in Detroit, the Peter Werby Show, Night Call.
Thank you very much for joining me. One of the things this program is about, of course, is information. How do we get information beyond the mainstream? And for a long, long while, of course, we had to depend on a whole group of journalists and writers and thinkers that were completely ignored by the mainstream. Everything that came out of the corporate and conservative media supported the powers that be, particularly since September 11th. One person who has been a stalwart for any number of years and has been in the forefront of internationally recognized journalism is Amy Goodman. Amy Goodman has, in my book, gotten endorsements, sort of what we call backhanded compliments. Bill Clinton called her hostile, combative, and even disrespectful. Former House Speaker Republican Newt Gingrich says, I have advised my mother to talk to no reporters because of people like you. She has her first book out. It's called The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them, and it's co-authored with David Goodman. Amy Goodman is also the host of Democracy Now! It's heard on 200 radio and TV stations across the United States and around the world. Amy Goodman, in fact, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
It's great to be with you, Peter.
The last time we had talked, it was about your experiences in East Timor, probably a country that most people would immediately start scratching their heads about, which sort of leads me to my first question is, how does one keep up with reality? You have this wonderful new book, The Exception to the Rulers, which still, I mean, even with events developing and unraveling for the Bush administration, still it's hard to be as current as reality, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, there is so much that is unraveling right now. But, I mean, I think the theme of the book, the title, The Exception to the Rulers, it's what all media should be. It shouldn't just be Democracy Now!'s motto. But there is a reason why our profession, journalism, is the only one that is explicitly protected by the U.S. Constitution, because we are supposed to be the check and balance on government, the exception to the rulers. We're not supposed to be acting as a conveyor belt for the lies of the administration, which is exactly what the New York Times and the major networks did in the run-up to the war and during the invasion of Iraq, not to mention this occupation. It's got to change. The general themes, they certainly are relevant today, the subtitle being Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. We've got the oily politicians. What we're seeing in Washington is the ascendancy of the oiligarchy. That is George Bush, a failed oil man, Dick Cheney, former head of the largest oil services corporation in the world. Condoleezza Rice had a Chevron oil tanker named after her, the Condoleezza Rice. Spencer Abraham, head of energy, in his one term as senator, had the largest campaign contributions from the automotive industry than any other senator. And, of course, you've got the war profiteers and this media that love all of them. And
yeah,
it's got to be challenged, this unholy alliance between the media and the military.
Spencer Abraham, of course, from Michigan, where we're broadcasting from, one of the losers that got taken into the Bush administration, second chance administration. I guess you lose the presidential election, you get to be the president. You lose the race in Missouri, you get to be the attorney general. Let me ask you about one of your chapters is called The Lies of Our Times, and I quote the New York Times so much on this program, people probably think, well, that is the one corporate media that probably you can go to and find out what's really going on. Now, there's an incredible connection between your chapter, The Lies of Our Times, that I assume was written about a year ago, and also what has just come out, and you have that in a counterpunch.org essay along with David Goodman. Tell us about your chapter and your book and the recent developments. This is absolutely incredible.
That's right. I mean, just in the last few weeks, the New York Times has written you really can't quite call it an apologia, maybe a kind of culpa as opposed to a mea culpa.
Okay.
But it's a box on page 810 that says the Times and Iraq. And they say that maybe they had some problems with their coverage, with their front page stories that allege weapons of mass destruction in the lead up to the invasion. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be much stronger than that. In our chapter, Lies of Our Times, we go through the scoops, and that's how they defend themselves, saying maybe they were rushing them to print too soon, and the oops, the mistakes that they made. And these mistakes were extremely costly. I would like to see corrections boxes as frequently as we saw the front page pieces in the same place that we saw these pieces, on the front page, not buried on page N, on page A10, because these mistakes matter. They are fatal errors. This is the paper of record that is what the corporate networks, their journalists read every morning as they move into their news meetings to decide what to bring you on television. It's what regional papers around the country use as a news service. They reprint these stories. And this is what the administration used to beat the drums for war. As Dick Cheney said on the day that the New York Times piece came out by Judith Miller and and Michael Gordon, the piece that said that Saddam Hussein was about to get nuclear weapons, and it was proved by these aluminum tubes that he had acquired.
Right.
Vice President Cheney went on Meet the Press with Tim Russert and said, you know, made this allegation that they were about to acquire nuclear weapons, Iraq. And so, basically he said, you don't have to believe me. Look at the New York Times today. And that's how this information, what we call the misinformation two-step, happened. You'd have the Bush administration leaking their lies to the New York Times, which would then print them on the front page, and the Bush administration would then hold them up and say, you know, you don't have to just believe us. There's an independent source, which is the New York Times. Yes, it matters what the Times says, what the paper of record says. Just ask the military families who've lost loved ones in the Gulf. The lies cost lives.
Now, Amy Goodman, on your show, Democracy Now!, I'm sure at the time that these Judith Miller, the most egregious of the exaggerations and outright lies and bad sourcing and all of that, that the New York Times just the other day has pointed to, I'm sure you, without having heard those shows, I'm sure you were taking that all apart, because I was. So you and I knew that everything that Judith Miller was writing was a lie, was based on, I can't say that anymore, can I? I was based on baloney, and it led to exactly what we've seen. Why did all of a sudden these sophisticated journalists, some of the best in the world, the New York Times, not figure it out till about 2 weeks ago?
Well, I mean, that's a very important point, because they were acting as cheerleaders for war. And it's not just the New York Times, it's the networks as well. If you look at the few weeks leading up to the invasion, right around when Colin Powell gave his address to the UN Security Council, his push for war, the Media Watch Group FAIR did a study of the four major nightly newscasts, NBC, ABC, CBS, and the PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. And they looked at, of the 393 interviews they did around war, only three were with anti-war representatives. That's three of almost 400. That is astonishing.
Sure.
That is not a mainstream media. That is an extreme media. Because at that same time, mainstream America was opposed to the invasion, believing there should be more time for diplomacy and inspections. This is an unacceptable abuse of this national treasure that is the public airwaves. Sure, there are corporations that are using them, private corporations. Disney owns ABC, General Electric owns NBC, Viacom owns CBS, but they are leasing the public airwaves, just like we are at Pacifica and, you know, NPR and PBS. We are all using the public airwaves, and we have a responsibility to bring out the full diversity of opinion. years ago, and we have a chapter on the exception to the rulers on this called Things Get Messy with Sally Jesse. We went on that talk show that reaches millions of women and others around that was on for many, many years every day, Sally Jesse Raphael Show. And it's a very funny story about the show and how Sally tried to cancel it once our anti-war views were aired. But because people called up around the country and said they want to see it, she was forced to finally air it. And the most interesting response I got to that program was from women on southern military bases who called to say, we have never heard this view in commercial television before, and we agree with you. Here were women who were going to war, or their loved ones were, who were being sent to kill or be killed. I don't know which is worse. And they did not think it was right. But they can't have these debates on military bases. They rely on us and civilian society to have these absolutely critical discussions. I see the media as a huge kitchen table that stretches across this country, that we all sit around and debate the most important issues of the day, war and peace, life and death, and anything less than that is a disservice to the servicemen and women of this country.
Amy Goodman's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's the host of Democracy Now! She's written The Exception to the Rulers, exposing oily politicians, war profiteers, and the media that love them, along with David Goodman. And it is published by Hyperion. Now, did that surprise you that a major publisher picked this up? And does this signal anything in terms of what these big publishing houses are willing to put on the market?
Well, it's interesting you raise that. I actually hope that people pick up the book, The Exception to the Rulers, because you rarely get a bestseller that is taking on the media. So it's hard to get the national networks to, you know, interview us because we are taking them on. But still, it's a national bestseller. And that just shows the hunger in this country for alternative views. I mean, we're on a 70-city exception to the rulers tour celebrating independent media around the country. We were recently in Grand Rapids, and we are traveling and adding more cities every day. It's unbelievable the crowds that come out. In Los Angeles, 2,000 people came out. In Minneapolis, 1,500. The bookstore said it was hotter than Potter, hotter than Harry Potter. Now, that's hard to believe, especially when the other authors of the bestsellers, they're on the national television constantly.
Sure.
We don't have that, and yet people are seeking out this view. And why I think it's important and goes to your question, Peter, is that it sends a message to the publishers, where I am in New York, which is sort of the heart of publishing, that there is, well, they call it a market, I call it a citizenry out there, that is absolutely starved for other voices. And every time a book like this succeeds, it makes space for another book in the future, another independent voice. And if we just go up two rungs on the New York Times bestseller list from 17, we're on the extended list, to 15, we'll appear in the pages of the New York Times. Now, they're not covering us, but that will mean, if we are in their pages, whether they like it or not, there will be a whole reading audience that doesn't particularly know about Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, and our national television radio show, that then gets access to this kind of media criticism of their own paper. You know, Lies of Our Times is one chapter. Another is Hiroshima Cover-Up, which is about how we think the New York Times should be stripped of a Pulitzer. It got, after World War II, their coverage of the bombing of Hiroshima, which denied that there was radiation contamination, and the writer for the Times, William Lawrence, was also on the payroll of the Pentagon, and we think that should be challenged. So it goes way back. But it gives people who read this paper access to this alternative information. So we are encouraging people to get it, to send it to public libraries and high school libraries and college libraries, these very under-resourced public spaces that don't get the kinds of books they should in this rapidly privatizing world. They don't have the kind of resources that they need.
Well, Amy Goodman, come to Detroit. I'll be glad to host a meeting. We'll talk after.
Love to.
Okay. Now, when I introduced you, it was just sort of provocative, the kind of things that Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich said about you. But I think it's very, very instructive. Bill Clinton said that you were hostile, combative, and even disrespectful. So, I mean, I'd heard a little bit of the exchange before, but I read through it in your book, The Exception to the Rulers, and it's very telling. He did not expect to be confronted
by
a journalist.
None of these guys do. I mean, politicians, especially those that are in power, are media deal with them on bended knee. International reporters talk about how the press in this country treats politicians like royalty, and that's got to change. They are simply public servants. They are in the listeners here employ, people who are listening right now, they're employed by the taxpayers of this country, by the voters of this country, to, you know, to run the government. And we have a lot of questions for them. And it was Bill Clinton who was president on Election Day. This was the day that extended into 5 weeks when we learned that President Bush had, well, not exactly won. He wasn't exactly elected, but he was selected. But on Election Day, President Clinton called. He was calling radio stations to get out the vote for Hillary. This was in New York for Hillary, who became senator, and Al Gore. And the White House called. It was a few minutes before we went on air, and they said, this is White House Communications. I thought they said White Horse Communications, which is a tavern in New York, very famous, right, because Dylan Thomas died there. And I'm thinking, what are they calling this early in the morning? I didn't think any of them would be up. And we're about to go on the air, so I said, what do you want? And they said, well, the president would like to come. I said, the president? The president of what? A tavern? They said, the president of the United States. So anyway, I didn't believe that it was really true, but we went on the air. He didn't come on, but right after the program, when there was a Latino music show on, in fact, the president called, and I raced into Master Control, and we conducted the interview. They said he had a few minutes to talk about getting out the vote. Well, that's fine. That's what he wanted to talk about, but I had a lot of things I wanted to raise with him. So we started there, and I asked, why should people vote when a lot of people feel both parties are captured by the corporations? And he answered that. And then I asked him about Leonard Peltier, the Native American leader who's been imprisoned in Leavenworth. Well, he'll be imprisoned for his whole life unless he's granted clemency, and that's what Clinton was considering. He'd never been asked this publicly. And then I asked him about the death penalty and asked about racial profiling, asked him if he had taken the party to the right, which might be the reason that Ralph Nader was running. And he got angry then, and he said, you know, I find you hostile, combative, and even disrespectful. And so I said I just had a few more questions for him. But asked him questions like why, during his first election, he went back to Arkansas to preside over the execution of Ricky Ray Rector, who had been mentally impaired, and what he thought of these studies that say the death penalty, for example, is racist, is applied in a discriminating way. And he said he didn't think it was true, but that that's why you should vote for Hillary and Al Gore, because they understood these studies. And I said, but they're for the death penalty. And he said, yes, but they understand. And I'm still trying to figure that out. So if you are for the death penalty and you don't realize that it's racist, you shouldn't be supported. But if you do realize it and you're still supporting it, you should vote for those people. But asking questions like racial profiling, Al Gore said if he became president, it would be the first act in office he would issue an executive order banning it. I said, but you guys were in power for 8 years. Why wouldn't you do it then? You know, challenging the idea of the promise versus the record. And these are the kinds of questions that I think a lot of people had, and I felt it was the responsible thing to do to ask the question. The next day, the White House called and essentially said I would be banned from the White House. And I said, what do you mean? He called me. I didn't call him. And then they said because I had gone outside of the agreed-upon questions. I said, I didn't agree to any set of questions. You had an agenda when you called, but, you know, I can ask any question I want. I'm a journalist. I didn't submit my questions to them. Then they said, well, he only had a few minutes, and I kept him on for 30 minutes. I said, for God's sakes, this is the most powerful man in the world. He could hang up if he wants to.
The whole transcript is in the exception to the rulers, and although this is filled in its entirety with such important information, that transcript is almost worth the price of the book itself. It's published by Hyperion, The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. No other journalist that I know of, and you know, you actually, I was thinking, boy, she was, as I was reading this, Amy Goodman, I was thinking, I bet I wouldn't have been that tough on her. I might have asked a couple of those questions, but when he kind of got his back up, I probably would have let it go. How come, I mean, he said that you were hostile and aggressive. That's okay. But disrespectful. In other words, he did not expect, as the president of the United States, to be in his face like that.
Well, I mean, I think that is a fault of the press, that there is a very pliant press, and you extend that to the war, and you see how frightening that is when, you know, we know not to believe politicians or government officials a lot of the time. I mean, there's a certain healthy skepticism, but you don't have that same feeling about the press. You think they're dissecting, analyzing, investigating, and when they don't, when they fall short, that is very frightening, because then they become, especially in this war, they've become the most powerful weapon of the Pentagon, because they are simply acting as a megaphone for those in power. I think it doesn't matter the party, we have to challenge it. And we challenge this whole idea, well, we call it the access of evil. The whole idea that reporters trade truth for access, that has to be challenged.
Well, is it that corrupt? I mean, you're in New York, say, with the New York Times, and I suspect you must either know or know people that know the New York Times reporters and the editors. So if you knew what you knew, and if you knew what I knew at the time that the Times was putting out, and there's no other way to put it other than the lies that their reporter Judith Miller wrote about in this, having absolutely no source, it's impossible that they could not have known that as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I mean, how many people were calling them and saying, you've got it wrong? Just today on Democracy Now, and people could check it out at democracynow.org, we had on Scott Ritter. He's the UN weapons inspector. He used to be on television and quoted in the media a lot when he was for war. But then when he saw this whole, the allegations, the charges of weapons of mass destruction, I mean, he was in Iraq. He was doing the investigating. He said it's not true. Other weapons inspectors like David Albright, they were talked to. I mean, Albright was talked to by Judith Miller and saying this isn't true. Their dissent was iced out, as Scott Ritter said. He was like blackballed by the Times. He couldn't be talked to until after. Now, that's a serious problem. When you had experts, not just us, who were looking at just on the face of it, there were so many people who were speaking out. You just didn't see them in the corporate media. People in the intelligence community, military families, and just the whole dissent that was growing there, who did not believe that they should be trading their blood for oil. It took a lot for the media to keep out all of this opinion, and yet they did. Hmm. And it is unforgivable.
Well, I wonder, in fact, we only have a minute or two left, maybe a couple minutes. How do we progress from here? I mean, I was at lunch today and with a couple guys not in the media, and they were saying that, you know, that the election's not even going to be held. If Bush wins, they're going to pull some stunt and not allow the Kerry to take office. I don't know.
Well, we have to be completely, we have to hold those in power accountable. I actually have a lot of hope. I believe that when people are active at the community level, whether or not you think the people who are running for the highest office are even different from each other, we have to be involved at the community level. We have to be our own leaders or support those that you do feel represent your point of view. Holding your own community accountable, having a media that speaks locally, that's not just clear channeling across the country. There are grassroots movements building in this country like we have never seen before, and that's what gives me hope. And it all starts at home. The most global issues begin right at home.
And also, it's important that we not just focus, in fact, I think that's what you're getting at, that we not just focus on the elections.
Exactly.
Because, yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. DemocracyNow.org is where you can find information about Amy Goodman's show. Also, more information about the book, The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them.
And where we're traveling to every day.
I was going to say,
tour.
Well, we want you to travel to Detroit.
Great. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Amy Goodman.
Thank you, Peter.
WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Imagine not being afraid to go to the dentist.
Imagine being able to accomplish all your dental care in as little as one appointment. This is what sedation dentistry at Dr. Katz in Livonia can do for you. You'll be able to smile with confidence and be proud of your appearance. If you've been putting off years of dental work, sedation dentistry will change your life. Over 35 million Americans have some level of anxiety when it comes to going to the dentist. But for many, it's more than being afraid. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they understand that your fears may have kept you from a dentist, but there's no need to feel embarrassed. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they're not here to judge you. They're here to help you and encourage you so that you can have the confidence a beautiful smile can bring. The experienced clinical team members at Dr. Katz in Livonia will make certain that you're relaxed and completely comfortable as they monitor you very closely while you're sedated. Many patients feel no discomfort whatsoever during and after treatment. It may be as simple as taking a pill. Let Dr. Katz help you to enjoy your visits to the dentist with sedation dentistry. Wake up to a beautiful smile at Dr. Katz in Livonia. Call today for your free consultation at 734-464-2000. That's 734-464-2000.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly. A medical weight loss is the shape of things to come.
Edward Benright. I've lost 114 pounds on a medical weight loss clinic program.
My name is Ramon Dawson. I went from a 44-inch waist to a 33-inch waist. Don't waste another day. The program, it does work.
Imagine having the best summer of your life. You can lose all the weight you want in time for summer for only $1 per pound. Go where Ed, Ramon, and thousands of other men and women have found a way to live a better life. The medical weight loss clinic works one-on-one with you. Team up with a medical weight staff and you can lose all the weight you want for only $1 per pound without drugs, without frozen food, just a regular grocery store menu and constant support.
Some restrictions may apply.
Call Medical Weight Loss now for your free consultation. Call 1-800-GET-SLIM. That's 1-800-GET-SLIM.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly. And medical weight loss is the shape of things to come.
This is WRIM.com.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station. 101 The Rip unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Rip request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Rip Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIM.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Rip all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Rip.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Howard Dean was over for me when I found out he didn't have cable. I don't know how anybody could not want cable if you can afford it. It just seems that we're so different. I don't see how you can be my president. Yeah, I mean, I worry that you'll do stuff that will take away my cable or something, or you never care about it. You don't care what's on TV, and what's on TV is a big part of my life.
Yeah.
I stayed at a resort once, and they didn't have TV. They thought that, people need to be outside here because we have these great grounds and stuff, so they thought they would make that decision for me.
Wow.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I spent the whole vacation in the lounge at the main part of the hotel.
But Mike said the only time I didn't have cable TV was when there was a brownout.
Does it smell good enough for you in there? How do you like the smell? Is it good?
Michigan! Stop it!
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rip.
That's good!
101
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Thank you very much for joining me. This is turning out to be a whole show about media. And if you think about it, media is a plural. It's a plural for medium, and it's what is between us and reality. So we have to have this immense trust in that medium in order to figure out what in the world is going on beyond our immediate purview, right? If we don't, how do we figure out what's going across the world or even down the block or in our city? And that's what we're going to talk about with Robert W. McChesney. And Robert McChesney Chesney is the author of The Problem of the Media, U.S. Communication Politics in the 21st Century. And Robert McChesney is the research professor in the Institute of Communications Research in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in Illinois. Robert McChesney, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
My pleasure, Peter.
Did you get that all on one business card?
I don't have a business card.
Okay, great. Now, a summary of this, that which was sent to me of your book, it says, the symptoms of the crisis of the U.S. media are well known. A decline in hard news, the growth of infotainment and advertorials, staff cuts, concentration of ownership, increased conformity of viewpoint, suppression of genuine debate. But a lot of people would say, hey, we just love our television. We've got 1,200 channels. It's clear as can be. We've got all the laughs and it's just us pointy, what do they used to call us, pointy-headed intellectuals that have any beef about it. If the people are so happy, why is Robert W. McChesney so unhappy about it?
Well, the people aren't that happy. In fact, I think what we've seen in the last couple of decades is a dramatic shift of public satisfaction with our media system and its output, ranging from journalism to sort of entertainment content. In fact, just 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, the Advertising Agencies of America commissioned a major study of Americans' attitudes towards advertising and media and found that over 60% of Americans now think there's way too much commercialism in our media system and they would like to have a lot less.
So there is a dissatisfaction, but there probably is the sense that people, as it is, feel that they're not empowered to take on the large power centers of decision-making in this country, and something that they view so passively. In fact, it's not like democracy or voting or taking part in activity to change government policy. We're supposed to sit back passively and watch this particular medium, say, of television or of radio. So there probably isn't much that people think they can do.
I think that you've hit the nail on the head, Peter. I mean, people are taught and are led to believe that our media system's natural, that it was something that was handed to us by divine inspiration or the founding fathers. They meant this is the only way you could have a free press. So if you don't like it, if you think there's too many ads, you don't think there's any journalism left, or the coverage of elections is terrible, that's just too bad. That's the American way. That's the way it has to be. But that's not true. And that, in fact, is an argument that I try to take apart in this book, and I show that, in fact, our media system is radically different 100 years ago, 200 years ago, and that the founding of the Republic, the founding of the Democratic Revolution that created this country, was predicated in the idea that policies create a media system. Free press doesn't happen. It's something that free people have to establish and use policies to build. Our media system today is entirely based on government-granted government monopoly privileges and subsidies. It's not a free market system. But the policies that have built this system have been made corruptly behind closed doors by special interests. The public hasn't been included in them. Policies have been made in the public's name but without the public's informed consent, and that's the heart of the problem we face.
Mm-hmm. There's often the sense that there was a golden age at some time or other, and you mentioned 100 years ago. 100 years ago, of course, there was no radio or television, but there still was big media, and much of it was pretty awful.
That's right. When we talk about golden ages, it depends what you're looking at or what you're talking about, and it's always a relative concept. I think that, the first two generations of the Republic's history, really before the Civil War, many press historians consider that a golden age because the quality of the journalism is considered very high. But it also had its weaknesses, too. We were a society that had slavery, for example. Then some people regard the journalism, of the professional journalism of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s to be a golden age of sorts because it seemed to be much higher quality than what we have today, which is so blatantly commercial and low quality for the most part. And even that journalism, though, that its high watermark in the 1960s and 70s, had its serious flaws, as scholars have shown. So, I mean, this isn't really a religious exercise to find some promised land in the past that we try to duplicate. The stuff of building a free press is actually trying to come up with coherent policies that produce the best possible media system. You're never going to have a perfect one, but I can tell you this. The one we have now is atrocious, and it's impossible to imagine a viable self-governing society, the sort of media system we've got in this country today.
Well, do a little illustration for us, if you would, and maybe you could even use as an example that period, say, between 1800 and 1860, where probably people would think, well, wait a minute, wasn't most of the population illiterate, and how could we have expected journalism better today? Because, hey, today we have all these exposés and all this immediate coverage of the Scott Peterson trial and and what have you. What was the quality of journalism? Well, maybe you could even kind of skip through a few different eras and tell us what you think were the kind of the high marks of it.
Well, I think if you look in that crucial period in the first two or three generations of the Republic's history, what we had then was not a press system at all like the one we have today. It was a highly partisan system, meaning all the newspapers tended to represent explicitly political viewpoints. They were controlled by parties often, or factions of parties. And almost all the media received enormous subsidies from the government to survive. They wouldn't have survived without these subsidies. In particular, the postage rate that was charged for distributing newspapers, and in those days everything was sent by the mails, was much lower than the actual cost. It was an explicit government subsidy to encourage the publication of newspapers. And what it meant was that by the 1830s in the United States, for example, we had vastly more newspapers per person in this country than in any other country in the world. We had a huge print culture. We had a degree of literacy in the northern states that was well above any other country in the world. And not surprisingly, we also had a very high rate of voter participation among white men, and even among non-property-holding white men in the northern states than we'd ever have again in this country's history. So we had a rich print culture, a diverse print culture, and not without its weaknesses, but it's quite different than the culture we have today. And the idea of the content of news tended to be strongly the issues that affect people's lives, whether you're going to go to war or not, and debates over war, taxes, tariffs. It wasn't a commercially driven news, as we see today, where basically inexpensive fare about celebrities or simply regurgitating what people in power say uncritically too often is what passes for journalism.
Robert W. McChesney is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. His book is The Problem of the Media, U.S. Communication Politics in the 21st Century. It's published by the Monthly Review Press. And I'm sorry, actually, I thought I had written down your website. I thought that was an excellent resource. Can you give us that?
Well, I think if you go to freepress.net, www.freepress.net, you'll find everything you need to know about this subject.
All right, that's good. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I was at an ACLU forum, and I wound up debating an editor, in fact, the director of the editorial page of the Detroit News, the Daily here, and I was obviously making debaters' points, and at one point I said that your paper is written at an eighth-grade comprehension level, reading comprehension level for people with an eighth-grade political comprehension level, which, of course, was rhetorical, but... Do you think that there is some substance to that, what I was saying beneath the rhetoric?
Well, I think that what we depend on our media to teach us and guide us, not just to reflect us. I mean, that's what a free press is all about. It has to monitor people in power and people who want to be in power. It has to have some way of ferreting out the truth on issues. It can't just regurgitate lies and expect us to do the fact-checking all the time. And it has to present a wide range of informed opinions on the most important issues we face today. Those are the criteria we need from a media if we're going to be a self-governing people. And this isn't a radical idea. This is elementary democratic theory. You can't have a democratic society, a free society, with human liberty unless you have a press system that does those things. And I think that's the real way we measure our press system. I mean, badgering editors, whether it's 8th grade or 11th grade level, misses the point. If our press system is doing those things that I just outlined effectively, everything else will fall into place. If it's not doing those things, it doesn't matter if it uses 18-syllable words. It's irrelevant. That's really the criteria we have to measure the quality of our press system by. And I think using those criteria, is it a ruthless watchdog of people in power or people who want to be in power? Is it providing a check on lies, an effective check on people so they can't lie? Is it providing a wide range of informed opinions on the important issues that face us? By those criteria, our media system's failing.
Now, tell us about the concentration of media. We hear a lot about this. I meant, and in fact, I forgot to do it. I was going to go look at Ben Bedekian's famous study, and you cited in your book The Problem of the Media. You have several citations from him. He was the person that first started looking at who owned media and what effect it had all on us. And I think he wrote in the late 1980s, and he was very concerned because that the majority of American media was owned like by 13 or 14 corporations. What's it like now?
Well, it's hard to put an exact figure on because where do you draw the line in media, including billboard companies, music companies, magazines? But if you go sector by sector, you know, films, newspapers, radio, what you find is that a small number of companies tend to dominate each of our media sectors. And secondly, what you find is that the largest media companies, and you take the top five or six in this country today, tend to be what are called media conglomerates. So all the major TV networks and all the film studios and all the music companies tend to be owned by the same five companies. They have these huge, vast empires. And these sort of companies did not exist two decades ago. So we've seen this massive wave of concentrated ownership. And by any sense of democratic theory, having fewer voices is not a good thing. The prejudice, the bias in a free society is always, it's better to have more voices, more media voices, rather than fewer. There should be a very high burden of proof to justify having fewer and fewer media owners in a free society.
Now, on the face of it, one would think that you would start getting a univocal presentation of issues, and particularly slanted towards the corporate owners and hence conservative, that which features the wealthy. And yet you could look at the success of a film like The Day After Tomorrow and what appears is going to be the success of Michael Moore's documentary, even though Disney said, we're not going to touch it, which, if nothing else, helped it. So it looks like there is this multiplicity of voices, even in the face of this media concentration.
It looks that way, perhaps, if you've had 18 martinis and are stretched out on the floor.
Yeah.
But I think only if someone comes out of, like, an immersion in Stalin or an authoritarian society could someone see us as having a diverse, rich culture. Media culture. And for one thing, you have to distinguish, first of all, between journalism on one hand and the nature of our journalism coverage and our entertainment coverage, what you were talking about, what you can make money off in terms of entertainment, films or music or even book publishing. In terms of journalism and what's considered professional journalism, there is a very rigorous and strict sort of limit on the range of permissible debate. And we saw it painfully, and we're suffering through it with the coverage of the build-up to the war of Iraq, where despite having 3 zillion websites and whatever else might be out there, what people were being exposed to in the overwhelming majority, almost all of our news media, was a pretty uniform voice that reflected the range of debate between President Bush and the heads of the Democratic Party. In other words, no debate at all, and accepted what we now know were blatant lies that got us into a war that looks right now to be perhaps the biggest single disaster in the last 100 years that this country's gone through. So our journalism, by no means, having a lot of voices, does that mean you get a lot of different perspectives or more critical work? Nothing of the kind. As for entertainment media, there's a little more flexibility. Sure, someone like Michael Moore's film is going to get out. But, I mean, really the striking thing there to consider is Michael Moore, Academy Award winner, everything he's done has made money for media corporations. Now, here he is, one of the biggest names in the country, and he's fighting to get a critical movie about President Bush made. He's absolutely putting his career in the line. A lot of people are, to get this movie shown, even though it won the Best Film Award in Cannes this year, one of the highest honors in the world. If Michael Moore was making films about how great capitalism is and how great corporations are and how wonderful advertising is and how wonderful President Bush is and how great America is when it invades all these countries, he'd have no trouble getting his films made. He'd probably have a four-hour-a-day talk show next to Rush Limbaugh all over the country. It's not a level playing field. If you go against the flow of the system, it's really hard. And the fact is that only Michael Moore could even conceive of getting this film done. The most brilliant young film student in the world couldn't get that film on, no matter how good it was. It takes Michael Moore's leverage to even get through the door.
Now, I'm also in this broadcast talking to Amy Goodman, the host of Democracy Now!, and here was a question that I put to her, and I don't know if it's something that can be answerable. The New York Times, talking about the coverage of the run-up to the war, just printed a lot of blatant nonsense, particularly coming out of the pen? I guess we don't have coming out of the pen anymore, but coming out of the computer of one Judith Miller. At the time, at the time that Judith Miller was running her stories in the New York Times, every responsible critic was saying, these stories are bunk. They're based on air. They're not sourced. They don't make a bit of sense given the facts. All that information was available all over the Internet. And yet the New York Times persisted. By a week or two ago, they published this apology on page A10, saying that they'd made a mistake, that they hadn't done their duty, and one would think that Judith Miller would be off to Siberia for her egregious errors of participating in readying the country for a war. But did these fellows, these gentlemen, mostly at the New York Times, were they absolutely unaware of the challenge to what they were printing and just belatantly discover what so many of us knew way back then?
No, I think what the New York Times is doing was doing what all media are doing. And in fairness to the rest of our news media, we pick on the New York Times because the standards may be a little bit higher there. But it's not like the Chicago Tribune or the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Detroit News were getting it right. It's not like they were challenging Judith Miller's interpretation. They were regurgitating it across the board. You know, you point out that there was criticism of Judith Miller from Amy Goodman, from Alex Coburn, from dissident websites. But in the mainstream press, that perspective was almost entirely unchallenged. In fact, Scott Ritter, someone who really was greatly defamed, who was the weapons inspector, ironically a Republican and a former Marine, who basically said, look, I was in Iraq for 7 years, and I can tell you they don't have weapons of mass destruction. He underwent a character assassination campaign that has been really almost unrivaled in American history to quiet him because he was going against the flow. So there was plenty of reasons for any credible journalist to understand what Judith Miller was doing and what the entirety of our press system was doing was inappropriate, wrong, and full of lies. But there were tremendous pressures in our journalism system basically to regurgitate what people in power were saying. And people in power were saying over and over, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, or they might have them. Iraq is tied to al-Qaeda. Iraq might have something to do with 9/11. We have to go in there and, you know, take out that government. Our entire media system was at blame, not just the New York Times. But the problem is, and I think it shows the importance of media and why this is such an important fight for us in a free society, you know, when the New York Times goes out and runs article after article, basically taking seriously the idea that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, even though there was no evidence to support that, no credible evidence, and the rest of our news media parrots that exact same position, that basically opened the door for President Bush to start this war. That was his goal. Our media completely failed in doing what a free press has to do, which is force people in power to really come up with evidence if they're trying to get us to go into a huge war.
Now, I was saying that the media at the time was Izvestia and Pravda, the Soviet papers that simply echoed the party line. And now, though, here we have everybody from the New York Times to all the news channels. They've suddenly discovered that, hey, maybe we weren't getting the full truth. Why all of a sudden have it seems like the U.S. corporate media is almost doing its job?
Well, actually, I wish it was. I mean, they're pretty good at postmortems. Like 18 years ago, we should have done this. I wish it was now we won't do it again, and this is how we're going to show you. Because right now, the big line that we're hearing in the New York Times and throughout our media is, you know, how we've got to stay the course so we can install democracy, and how crucial it is for the United States to remain there to make sure there's a stable democratic government. When, in fact, the argument that the U.S. government's making that it's all about trying to put a stable democracy in flies in the face of all the evidence. I mean, there's no reason to think we have any interest in democracy there. None of our behavior suggest that, but our news media is allowing that line to sail through without challenge. I think it will be looked on as large a failure as the willingness to go along with the weapons of mass destruction claim. So I don't think our press coverage necessarily has gotten better. What's happened, though, in the case of the weapons of mass destruction charge simply is that since there's absolutely no evidence, I mean, they simply, at some point, they made such a big deal out of this, and there's a, you know, it's quite clear it was a blatant lie now. It doesn't hold up the slightest bit of scrutiny. Because, you know, we're in a situation now, and I don't think most Americans realize this. People in Detroit might, because they can cross the river and go over to Windsor and see what's happening in Ontario. But, I mean, the rest of the world is absolutely appalled at this war. I mean, mm-hmm. We've never been at such a low level international support, and I think in our nation's history. And, you know, I think we're journalists who are, leave this country and have to deal with this understand this. And I think that the people in this country are tremendously concerned about this war. I think that you don't have to scratch people very hard to say they're really upset by this. So I think there's a degree of dissidence which is allowing a little more criticism in our news media than would normally be there.
Robert W. McChesney is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His book is The Problem of the Media, U.S. Communication Politics in the 21st Century. It's published by Monthly Review Press. And just so you don't think that we're partisan here, let's turn a little the clock back a few years and take a look at how we got this intense media concentration over the last 10 years or so. And that's the 1996 Telecommunications Act. What did it do and why did it have so little opposition, and why did a supposed liberal like Bill Clinton sign it?
Well, you got to understand that, again, our media system is not a free market system. All the 10 or 20 companies that dominate our entire media system that exist are the recipients of government-granted and enforced monopoly privileges. It's not free market. So a company gets free rights to use radio or TV monopoly frequencies, and the government enforces their monopoly use of those frequencies, or it gets the right to have a monopoly cable system in a community, or a monopoly satellite system, or it gets copyright, which is nothing more than government created and enforced monopoly privileges over content. It's an artificial thing to prevent competition. So our entire media system is based on these government-granted monopoly privileges and subsidies. And then the key question is, how are these privileges and subsidies determined? And the real problem we face in the United States is that these privileges, these allocation of airwaves and cable systems, are made by super powerful lobbies behind closed doors. The public knows nothing about them, but the eventual policies are made in the public's name without their informed consent. And the crucial policies in a commercial media system that we face as citizens are ownership policies. How many of these monopoly radio licenses, monopoly TV licenses, are we going to let a single company have? After all, it's public property. And these are of tremendous interest to the big media companies because they know that the more radio and TV stations and cable systems they can own in combination with other media, the less competition they face, the more they can run advertising without fear of competitive challenge, and the more profit they can make. It's just capitalism 101. Concentration monopoly is good for profit. It's bad for everyone else. And so these fights over ownership levels and media policy, the granting of these licenses and how many a single company can have, take place behind closed doors. They get no press coverage. And I think what you get back to your question, the 1996 Telecommunications Act was an effort basically to revisit these core issues of how much media a single company could own in the coming years and challenge and alter the 1934 law, which has set up the regulation of radio and TV. And as I just said, all these deliberations were done without any public awareness, no press coverage, behind closed doors, and both parties were totally in bed with the industry, which wanted to relax media ownership rules. But the funny thing here, the interesting thing is these big media companies are fighting with each other. It's not like they're in cahoots. I mean, the cable companies have a different agenda from the television networks, who have different agenda from the film studios, to the extent they're owned by separate companies. And so they couldn't really settle the relaxation of media ownership rules, and they sort of foisted that off onto the FCC after 1996, except for the case of radio, which they did relax in the 1996 law. And it was a bipartisan effort, as you said, to sort of relax these ownership rules. But what has happened in the last 2 years has been so dramatic, Peter, is that when the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, had a formal review beginning in 2002 of whether it should relax media ownership rules for a lot of for radio and television and for the ability to own newspapers and television in the same town, when it considered this starting in 2002, the people of this country began to hear about it, and we saw an unprecedented uprising of public opposition to media concentration in this country. We haven't seen anything like this in 100 years.
60 seconds, unfortunately, for a question of can the people do anything?
Absolutely, and I think that's what we learned in 2003 when nearly 3 million people contacted Congress and the SEC to say we don't want to relax the media ownership rules. We like the idea of having competitive media markets, more voices rather than few. And I think the Congress and the courts have both backed off as a result. I think when people do organize and say free press is important to us, they're going to stop this sort of concentration from taking place, and they can create a much better media system. The website I gave earlier, freepress.net, really provides an entree to the whole range of issues that are covered by people who are concerned about having a free press, and I'd urge listeners to go there.
Yeah, and again, to make it understood that they are our airwaves.
That's
are
right.
The public airwaves.
And it's our free press system. If we don't have it, we don't have a democracy.
Pat Mitchell, who's the president of the public broadcasting system, said, no scholar has done more to advance our understanding of the importance of media for democracy than Robert W. McChesney. The book is The Problem of the Media, U.S. Communication Politics in the 21st Century. Monthly Review Press is the publisher. And again, the website, you can go to freepress.net. It'll also be on my website as well, peterwerby.com. Robert McChesney, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Imagine not being afraid to go to the dentist. Imagine being able to accomplish all your dental care in as little as one appointment. This is what sedation dentistry at Dr. Katz in Livonia can do for you. You'll be able to smile with confidence and be proud of your appearance. If you've been putting off years of dental work, sedation dentistry will change your life. Over 35 million Americans have some level of anxiety when it comes to going to the dentist. But for many, it's more than being afraid. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they understand that your fears may have kept you from a dentist, but there's no need to feel embarrassed. At Dr. Katz in Livonia, they're not here to judge you. They're here to help you and encourage you so that you can have the confidence a beautiful smile can bring. The experienced clinical team members at Dr. Katz in Livonia will make certain that you're relaxed and completely comfortable as they monitor you very closely while you're sedated. Many patients feel no discomfort whatsoever during and after treatment. It may be as simple as taking a pill. Let Dr. Katz help you to enjoy your visits to the dentist with sedation dentistry. Wake up to a beautiful smile at Dr. Katz in Livonia. Call today for your free consultation at 734-464-2000. That's 734-464-2000.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Got a program that fits you perfectly, and medical weight loss is the shape of things to come.
My name is Edward Benoit. I've lost 114 pounds on a medical weight loss clinic program.
My name is Ramon Dawson. I went from a 44-inch waist to a 33-inch waist. Don't waste another day. The program, it does work.
Imagine having the best summer of your life. You can lose all the weight you want in time for summer for only $1 per pound. Go where Ed, Ramon, and thousands of other men and women have found a way to live a better life. The medical weight loss clinic works one-on-one with you. Team up with a medical weight staff, and you can lose all the weight you want for only $1 per pound without drugs, without frozen food. Food, just a regular grocery store menu and constant support.
Some restrictions may apply.
Call Medical Weight Loss now for your free consultation. Call 1-800-GET-SLIM. That's 1-800-GET-SLIM.
We've got a program that fits you perfectly. And medical weight loss is the shape of things to come.
This is WRIM.com.
Twice.
Is nice.
W for Tuesday on the Rip.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you 2 for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Rip all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Rip rock band.
Plus, the Rip gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Rip rock.
Double the Rip prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
2 for Tuesday on the Rip. From 101 WRIF. If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey, it's Joe and Mike, and it was Don't Stump Mike, and unfortunately for me, the subject was Friends, and I've never even seen an episode of Friends.
What city do they live in?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wait a minute.
You have like two notes.
Well, let me think. I mean, actually, I just want to just say L.A.
Oh, you said L.A.?
Yeah, L.A.
No.
Oh, no.
You're killing me, Greg. He was on hold for a long time.
Oh.
Oh, Greg, aren't you bummed? Aren't you going, jeez. Mike, Central Perk, come on, man.
Oh, jeez,
why,
man.
Why did you think he would get New York? Why did you think that was so easy?
I knew it was between New York or L.A. I just hope he was guessed the right one.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff.
Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Now it's the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock.
One solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
Rock at 9 o'clock
with Meltdown.
What a
W-R-I-F.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
The King of Pop also habitually gulped down soda cans of wine, particularly when he's on airplanes. On a flight to Frankfurt in 1999, for example, his former business advisor, Ming Ho Lee, had to help the staggering Jackson stand up to get off the plane.
Can't you imagine him just, when he's so wasted like that, him just coming out and saying, somebody, give me a 12-year-old boy. the kid in 93... I did.
We finished on the Jackson story where Jackson got his genitals photographed, and I told you, Michael slapped the doctor.
I think he thought the doctor was getting a little too grab-baggy over everything, and the doctor was too old.
Now he
they had a 12-year-old in there. Yeah. They had Doogie Howser.
Hey, tonight, grandma,